Thank you. We were going to have our wonderful Morro Bay High School football team come and lead the pledge for us, but apparently they're all sportaholics and they're involved in other sports already, and so they couldn't. So instead, we have Dawn Williams from the high school, and she's going to lead the pledge for us.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dawn. Would you like to give your high school report, too?
Yes. Hi, everyone. For those who don't know me, I'm Dawn Williams. I am the senior class president at Morro Bay High School, and I am currently a member of the Morro Bay High School girls varsity basketball team. I just came from practice, so. At Morro Bay High School, we just wrapped up our fall sports. It was a great year for our football team. Football went undefeated in league. They are the 2007 Los Padres League champions, and they made it to the second round of CIF. It was very exciting. Boys cross country actually took fifth in the state. Girls golf took third in league and missed CIF by just one stroke. Also, we had a great season out of our girls tennis and girls volleyball. We're now moving into our winter sports schedule. This season, we have boys and girls basketball, boys and girls soccer, girls water polo, and wrestling. We extend our invitation to the community to any home events, and we just want to remind you guys that all senior citizens are free, and we're one of the last schools on the Central Coast to do that. So if anyone is going to have a free night, come out and support us at one of our home matches or games. All schedules can be found in the athletics office at Morro Bay High, or you can visit our website, which is really good at all the upcoming events and dates, and they have all athletic schedules on it. To navigate to it, you just Google search Morro Bay High School, and then the URL pops right up, and there's a lot of fun pictures, schedules, updates on that site. Our choir concert is actually tomorrow night, December 11th, at the PAC, or Cohen Center. Following that will be our band concert, which is December 12th. Both events start at 7 p.m., and admissions is $10. If you have any questions regarding tickets, you can contact our front office. I'm sure they'll be happy to assist you, but I'm almost positive they sell tickets at the door there at the PAC Center. That's it for our December announcements. Thanks again for letting us come and represent Morro Bay High School. We are so thankful for the support we already have from the community, but we're looking for more. And so come support us at Morro Bay High School. And from us at Morro Bay High, we wish you guys a safe season's greetings and have happy holiday. Thank you.
Dawn. Okay, next up we have our volunteer of the month, Cheryl Lisinski. Where's Cheryl? I know her in two different ways. There we go.
For the past several months, the Recreation and Parks Department has been acknowledging or recognizing volunteers. And this December, we are recognizing Cheryl Lisinski and the National Estuary Program. And I have a little bit of information about what they've done for the city. Cheryl contacted us to offer collaboration on environmental and nature field trips and activities for participants in the Kids Camp program, which is a summer day camp program for kids for first through sixth grade. She coordinated with the Morro Bay State Park docents in creating four specific fun shops for kids camp participants. The activities and field trips included learning how to identify native wildlife through various ways, such as tracks left in the ground or even by their scat, which they smelled and looked at and took apart, apparently. Also, that was a highlight of the whole thing. Also, native bug hunting and identifying, including learning their body parts and scientific terms associated with each bug. Kids Camp also discovered the wonders of the hidden estuary while tromping through the mud flats and exploring areas in and around the Natural History Museum, which very few of the children in the program had actually done. And finally, the kids' camp kids learned the history of the Chumash Indians. All these trips and activities were led by Cheryl and the docents from the Morro Bay State Park. They provided hours of learning, discovery, and fun for the children, and we so appreciate both the National Estuary Program and Cheryl. And we've got a certificate for her tonight.
And I'm going to add, I've also worked with Cheryl with the Bird Festival, and she's in charge of our environmental groups and their displays. So this certificate honors you for as Volunteer of the Month for December 2007. Thank you very much.
Oh, I just want to take a really quick minute to compliment the city of Morro Bay on having such a fabulous kids' camp program that does really take the time to get kids outside and involved with nature, which is increasingly rare these days with the competition from video games and television and such. It was a great pleasure and very enjoyable to work with the city of Morro Bay staff as well as all the great local youth who came out for the summer camp program. And I just wanted to mention in particular that Catherine Waters, who heads up the kids' camp program, took a lot of extra time to make sure that the partnership went smoothly and that we always understood exactly where we should be at what time and that everything was a success. And also to underscore that this partnership really could not have taken place without the help of the state park docents. They are fabulous volunteers, as I'm sure most of you are aware. And in particular, Sue Fong, Chuck Mills, and Linda Winters really partnered with me tightly. We were on a planning committee together, and they volunteered dozens and dozens of hours. So although I'm being honored as a volunteer tonight, I really would move this compliment forward to the State Park docents and then back to City of Morro Bay staff. It's a great partnership. I think we're looking forward to doing it again this coming summer. So thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Cheryl. Our next presentation, we have Ed Frawley here. This is our Get to Know Your Local Business program, and he's with Central Coast Music, and he's going to tell us all about the things that you can buy there that you do not have to go to San Luis Obispo to Christmas shop.
Hi, my name is Ed Frawley. I've got Central Coast Music. I've had it for about 18 years here in Morro Bay. I feel really lucky to have a business and just to live here. I've got a pretty wide selection of musical gear and instruments in the store. We try to stay real competitive so we can all be surviving here with our businesses. It's tough when you've got mail order and big box stores to deal with, but I think it boils down to how you treat your customers and how hard you work from the ground up in the business. It isn't how you advertise or what you say, but what you do and what you'll back up. A lot of the companies that I have to compete with that are online or in San Luis or, you know, the surrounding area, all they can really do is give you a good price. They can't back it up and be for you or, you know, be for the customer after the sale. There's not much that they can really do for you. And that's something that I've tried to always have in my business is, you know, to instill into my customers what I'm there for, not just to get their money, to make a friend, do good business, and hopefully grow it bigger and make, you know, the town bigger. You know, we all work together here, and I think we all want to keep it a nice place to live.
Okay.
And that's about all I got to say. So,
well, the other thing I'll say about you is that Ed is always very generous with helping support different events if he can with equipment and things like that. I've never known him to say no. Thank you very much.
I try. Thanks a lot. Okay.
All right, and next we're going to find out what those butts are. Tim McLean, could you please come and tell us about them?
Yes. We need something on the overhead projector as well.
Okay.
Yeah. My name is Tim McLean. I've had my jewelry store in Cayucas for
the last... Have you got the overhead piece there?
We have it somewhere. Hi, Nancy.
Give it to Nancy, and she will. She's our Vanna White here. She'll put it up for you. Okay.
I'm Tim McLean. I've had my jewelry store in Cayucas since 1977. I'm a former resident of Morro Bay. And I'm here to talk about my cigarette butt pollution solution here. Like merchants in many cities and towns across America, we find ourselves picking up cigarette butts continuously, and it's a huge problem. There's worldwide, there's 4.3 trillion cigarette butts discarded annually. It's a big problem. I came up with this idea and donated 10 of these to the town of Cayucas just because I was tired of picking up cigarette butts, and we've implemented 10 of them, the first ones that I donated, then the some other city organizations, town members have purchased them, and so we have probably about 20 of them in place in Cayucas. And I'm here representing Morro Bay Beautiful tonight to see if we can get permission to implement them into Morro Bay, the Embarcadero, Old Town, wherever cigarette butt pollution is a problem. It'd be nice to get them in place. The summer months are definitely the busiest time, but cigarette butts are here year-round. And with the sensitivity of our estuaries and our waterways here in Morro Bay, I think it would be an important thing to add to the town of Morro Bay. The latest results out of some research in New York City, excuse me, in Central Park, as they found out that the small mammal populations were using these cigarette butts for nesting, and therefore the mice, rodents, squirrels, different types of rats were coming up with these unusual deformities and kind of mutations. So it's something that's just kind of been discovered. It affects marine life, all of our bird life, especially along the coast. So we have several different models. The one that we're going to be using here in Morro Bay, it says the butt stops here. That was Ann Reisner's design. And show that to the group.
And how many
here.
Do they hold? It's a lot, right?
And yeah, these hold approximately 1,000 cigarette butts. And they're fireproof, rodent-proof. It has a very small opening on the top, so you can only get a cigarette butt into these. You can't. The first ones I designed had a bigger opening. People were crumpling up coffee cups, and I brought us a little demonstration here. And please pardon the smell. This is a 2-week collection of cigarette butts from downtown Cayucas. To give you an idea of how disgusting this is, that's what we've collected in Cayucas just in a 2-week period out of 10 of these. So you imagine if we get 50 of these in Morro Bay, keep a lot of this material out of the creeks and out of our waterways. The pole mount one, there's several different strap sizes that will accommodate different poles, all the way from just your 2-inch street poles that are along the sidewalks, as well as we make an 8-inch strap for like the city street lamp poles. And we have 3 of these in Morro Bay right now, and we'd like to, Morro Bay Beautiful has some funds earmarked so that we could implement more of these. So that's basically it. If anybody has any questions.
Thank you so much. That's great. I know there's one at the post office that I've seen already. So
yeah, that was the first one we put up.
Great.
First one on a federal building.
Wonderful.
So we're starting at the top and working our way back.
Thank you very much. It's a wonderful invention. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And next reports, fire and police. Who wants to go first?
Are we going to have time for both of us today? I'll
yeah,
go real fast.
Yeah, make it.
All right.
A lot of work.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. It's been very busy up at the fire station. A lot of calls this time of year, especially right now. There's some kind of flu-type illness that's going around, and we're seeing a lot of people down with that, causing some respiratory problems and also dehydration. We've responded to one facility 12 times in the last 48 hours, and it's getting quite worse. And it's affecting our firefighters as well. I'd say about 50% of our firefighters are down with it right now. So our staffing is getting a little more tentative right now. But we're still covering things fine. On a good note, Specialty Construction is working away across the street from the fire station. As you know, we broke ground over there, but they have the heavy equipment came in the Monday after Thanksgiving, and they've been digging some giant holes and over excavating and compacting, and so we're real excited about actually seeing work underway at that location. Our ad hoc CAL FIRE Investigation Committee that was established by Council November 13th will be meeting for the first time in a kickoff meeting on December 17th at 3 p.m. at the Community Center in the conference room. This will just be an organizational meeting, get ourselves underway and ready to start working mainly after the new year. Light a Boat Parade, that was a great event for the city, but it was also a great event for the fire department and the Coast Guard. We partnered in hosting a little party for the Lisanne Rouche Burn Foundation and the burn survivor kids from our county and as far away as Fresno. It was a great event. The kids got to go out on the Coast Guard cutter and be in the parade. And then we actually had council member Rick Grantham come in as Santa. I just gave you away there, Rick. But Rick did a great job as Santa, and the kids really really thought it was Santa, and it was really cute to watch that interaction. What else? We had a rare event where the fire department, the state parks, and the county technical rescue team did some training on Morro Rock. If you saw some people on the 5th, on Wednesday the 5th, we had three different time periods where we were able to go up and do a orientation tour of the rock in preparation for a training drill that we're going to have in January. But also, it's a very hazardous location, and a lot of the technical rescues that we do have on that rock occur at night. Somebody may get injured trying to hike or climb that during the daytime, but it goes into nighttime before we find them and actually get them off the rock. So it was a very good opportunity for us to see what the trail is like, where the hazards are, but also learn about the cultural and the environmental issues associated with the rock. And we appreciate the Saline and Indians for also coming up and giving us an orientation from their perspective. The city also trained 55 employees in the National Incident Management System, our multi-hazard emergency to keep the children away from candles and things. Christmas Day is the day that holds the record for the highest number of fires started by candles. So watch out on Christmas. Keep those candles under control. Keep your pets and your children away from those. And with that, I'll turn it over to the police department. Here you go, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Peters, council members. Tim Olivas, commander at the police department. I'm here on behalf of John DeRohan. Appreciate this opportunity to share with the community what's going on inside their agency. Recruiting efforts in May 2007, you may recall we hired Doug Collins, who actually worked for the fire department as a reserve officer and was looking to pursue a career in law enforcement. We were fortunate enough to have a position open and provide that to him. He was very successful in the oral boards and has been in the academy down in Allen Hancock in Santa Maria ever since. We're very proud to announce he's going to be graduating this Friday and will be sworn in on Monday, December 17th by Mayor Peters at the police department. We advertised for a property evidence technician, which is a part-time position which has been vacant for about the past 2 years recently. We had 24 applications for this position, and the successful applicant from an oral board, we narrowed it down to 2 applicants. And I'm pleased to announce that we're going to start a background investigation on the top candidate. We actually already have and are hoping to give her a conditional offer towards the end of this week, which will fill that vacancy, which is been taken over by myself and one of our sergeants, so that'll be a much deserved, needed rest. We were fortunate during the same oral board that we found someone who had previously been dispatch experience in Florida at both city and county law enforcement agencies, and we have a vacant reserve dispatcher position also, and asked if she was interested in it, and she was, so we've started a background investigation into her and hope to offer her a conditional offer here shortly. So those will fill our part-time positions, which we're very pleased about. For our vacant police officer position, we conducted the recruiting trips to Fresno and Monterey, which Chief DeRohan mentioned at the last time. We did generate some interest. We currently conducted oral boards for 2 lateral academy graduates, as well as we did testing, which involved post-testing, including physical, written, and oral boards for entry level, similar to what we did when we hired Doug Collins. And we're very pleased to announce that one of the Fresno Academy graduates, which graduated this last Friday, was successful in the oral boards, and we have started a background on her, which will fill our vacant position, which she will be hired after she finishes the background. We do a conditional, then she has to go through a medical and a psychological, and we give a full offer, and then enters into the FTO program. So we're very pleased about that. Had a real focus on community aspect and really seemed to be a good fit with our community and our police department. As far as enforcement efforts, well, unfortunately, as far as retention, we have some officers with applications out still. We do have one officer currently in backgrounds with San Luis Police Department. And as far as enforcement efforts over the past month, we responded to 3 accidents involving drivers under the influence. During that same time frame, we actually arrested 18 drivers for driving under the influence, which is a pretty high number in a 30-day period. We continue to operate with the Office of Traffic Safety Grant and conduct saturation patrols. And in order to make this season safer for the community as a whole, we encourage people who do decide to go out and celebrate to designate a driver. On behalf of everyone at the Morro Bay Police Department, we wish you a happy and safe holiday. And thank you.
Thank you. Okay, for our announcements. Okay. All right, for council announcements, first of all, I would like to clarify something. There was a letter in the paper, there's an article in the paper that said that our new Harbor Walk had been funded from the general fund. That is not the case. It was almost entirely grant funded, a little bit of money, matching money that we put up, and it's been allocated several years now. So that was a mistake. The Tribune did print the correction. Apparently was not seen by someone who wrote a letter who restated the incorrect information. So I just wanted to have it out there. That was mostly a grant-funded project. We did not use our funds for that. And it's also a wonderful project, so I hope you all go out and look at it. It's really nice. This will be our last meeting in December, so our next meeting will be in 2008. So you don't have to worry about us in 2 weeks. Enjoy your holidays. The luminarias were all lit last night in South Morro Bay. And if you haven't seen that, put it on your list of things to do next year. It was really beautiful. A lot of people walking around. The choir was singing carols. It was quite lovely. We also had our first holiday celebration in downtown Morro Bay, which was quite successful as well. Again, the carolers from Morro Bay High School. And a lot of the stores stayed open. Good time to get your shopping done early and locally. So I appreciate all of the stores that did that. Boat parade was great. Tree lighting was well attended this year. A lot of kids, and Santa was there too and read The Night Before Christmas to them. Let's see. The other thing that I just want to do is thank a lot of people. We have a lot of volunteers who work to put on events. I want to thank the people.
Radar with them, and so it's nice to be part of the group now on a regular basis.
Okay. Bill?
No.
Rick?
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago now, but the Thanksgiving dinner that we had, that's a combined effort between the police department and the Rotary Club of Morro Bay, served 500 folks. Want to say thanks to the Boy Scouts, to the cooks, to the servers, to the people that decorated, to the setup crew that helped put the tables and chairs up, and especially I have a special fondness for the cleanup crew. They really, you know, and it's the same people that show up. They just show up and say, "Well, we're here again." And there's a couple that shows up every year, and this one fella. I'm also not going to say any names because that's not why they do it. But they're very much appreciated. The recent boat parade was really a quality event, probably the best one I'd ever been a part of. Thank you, Kathy Novak, for helping lining up the boats and getting their bios for us. Hank, I'm sure, is going to talk about the Santa trolley, so I won't. And even though it's going to be Christmas Eve Day, the EOC will be here for you to for senior health screening from 9 to 12 at the community center. Checking your blood, answering your medical questions. So please take advantage of that free service. So that's 9 to 12 o'clock. They'll be here Christmas Eve Day as they are every last Monday of the month. Thanks.
Yeah, I would like to unfortunately announce another increase in some bill. I serve on the Integrated Waste Management Authority, and several months ago we decided that we needed to add on 30 cents to your trash bill. And basically, that's to pay to keep the hazardous household waste centers open. Ours is open on Saturday morning down at the wastewater treatment plant, and you can take your hazardous waste there. But now you'll see 30 cents extra on your trash starting in January. Also, I'd like to remind everybody that we now have primaries in Morro Bay, and that is not the February primary. It's the June primary. And council and mayor positions will be up for grabs in June. I've been concerned that this be noticed to people in case you're thinking about running, in case any of us are. And I hope that our city attorney is going to come and give us a little bit more info about it at the next meeting or two. I know he's talking to Julie Rodewald tomorrow about the mechanics of it. A citizen reminded me that we have a resource in the RTA buses that the bus line that runs from here to Cambria over to Los Osos and to San Luis Obispo. You can come into City Hall any day of the week and buy yourself a pass and get a nice discounted rate. I ride the bus pretty regularly back and forth to Cal Poly. It's enjoyable. You can read and relax on the bus. I think... and then the last thing I think I would say is that I've been fiddling around with conservation around the house, and I went from 4 units of water, which I thought was a mistake. I think I watered a tree too long. I cut it in half to 2, and I thought I can't get any lower than that. I opened my water bill, as many of you did the other day, and I got down to 1 unit. I live alone in a small house, but still I think I'm pretty pleased with that 1 unit. You can't get lower. So I would urge conservation continue. I went to a Where's the Water presentation last night in Arroyo Grande, which was rather scary, but I have some ideas that I'll hold for future agenda items. Thank you.
Okay. And one thing, I was asked about where we are in the roundabout at Quintana and Morave Boulevard, and that is it's gone through peer review, and staff is looking at it right now. Probably will get into construction time in February. So, okay, with that, we will open it to public comment. And please come. Closed session report. I forgot.
That's okay. Good evening. Is this on? Good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council met on closed session on 2 separate items that are allowed under the Brown Act. The first one was real property negotiations. The second one was personnel issues. As to real property transactions and negotiations, council discussed 3 leases that we have: the Coakley lease, the Arnold lease, and the Clausen lease. As to all 3 leases, no action was taken under the Brown Act that requires reporting. The personnel issues discussed was the city manager and the city attorney. As to those both personnel items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. And now, public comment.
Good evening, Council. Hank Roth, Morro Bay. Santa's coming to town starting tomorrow. Carolyn cop cars and Christmas trolley will be weaving our way through town, starting in the north end. We'll start up in the north end of town and move our, you know, work our way through to, we're going to try to make it to Avalon Street on Tuesday, Wednesday from about Hill Street to Morro Bay Boulevard, and Thursday we'll finish up on the south end of town with a special stop up at up at Casa de Flores.
The other thing I'd like to say is thank you to Heather and Joe of the Parks and Rec Department for putting on the Christmas tree lighting. They had the Central Coast Dance Tour. They were just really great. We had the Morro Bay Choir. There was, I don't know how many, a lot of people. And then on top of that, all of a sudden, Santa and 2 elves came on the fire engine. And he read The Night Before Christmas and took care of all the small children. So it was really a great event, and I appreciate all the work that they did. The very last thing I'd like to say to everyone, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Keith.
Good evening. Claire Grantham, resident, member of Community Service Volunteer, Friends of the Morro Bay Police Department. First of all, congratulations on all your new hires. That sounds great. I just wanted to reiterate a little bit what Rick said about Thanksgiving dinner. It really was a fabulous event, but one of the things I don't think he mentioned was all of our officers delivered meals to people in uniform, and it was really neat. One of the officers actually came in and said, "Give me 30 meals," and he went out and found people under bridges and homeless people, and it was just really, really a super event, so I was really proud of them. And, of course, all the police volunteers, community volunteers, it really was super. Also, the police department had a wonderful Christmas party the other night put on by the POA, and all of the Friends of the Morro Bay Police Department were happy to be invited, and we really enjoyed it. I want to thank Doug Redican for doing a really nice dinner. Just a couple things about public safety. I'm sure you all heard that there was a murder in San Luis last week, and it was really kind of close to home when you find bodies. And it's really neat that they were able to have detectives and to investigate it and arrest people. So we have to keep that in mind when we think about our sleepy little village. There is crime in the area. No one expects it, plans on it, but it happens. And as we enter the holiday season, I just think it's really important that we remember the people that protect us, because when we're home celebrating on Christmas Day, they're going to be working protecting us. So let's just remember that, you know, it's a regular work day for them. And as an infection control nurse, I just have to throw in a few other things about health and just remind people to eat safely during the season and not leave their turkey stuffing and things sitting out and mayonnaise-y stuff, because we see a lot of foodborne illnesses as well as the pneumonias that Mike's seeing. So everyone be careful, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Candy Botich. I'm here tonight regarding the water lease agreement adjacent to 225 Main Street. It's item A2. There's a deed restriction on my property at 206 Main Street for the 5 parking spaces done by the Coastal Commission. It specifically states the spaces will remain until the waterfront parcel at 225 Main is redeveloped. I do not feel that the lease as written is in keeping with the original permit issued by the Coastal Commission. Therefore, I would ask the city to change the amendment number 1, section 13.03, number 4, for the use of the parking spaces to coincide with the recorded deed restriction rather than the length of the lease. Thank you. Merry
Thank
Christmas.
You. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Danny Tope. It's nice to be here, and I am a registered voter. A couple of things I'd like to discuss this evening. First of all, I noticed that B1, an extension of an ordinance for marijuana, medical marijuana, I am on the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board in San Luis County. We are in epidemic levels of meth use statewide, nationwide. I have information and language that will prove that 22 dispensaries have been shut down in the San Diego area, going into the Orange County area, because of who uses them. There's pictures of 18-year-olds going in and out of those with little brown bags. This is not what we need in our community. You know, let people do what they do at home, let them get it somewhere else, but do not let them get it in our town. That's one thing. Also, I noticed that you have a lot of abuse in the alcohol part of town, I guess it would be a part of town. Anyway, the ABC board has a class, a 4-hour course that's free to the public. In the state of Hawaii, it is mandatory.
I made these signs. I'm very proud of them. I'm here to thank you for the little raise they got. But I'm also here to tell you it's not enough. When your police are out there putting their life on the line every day for 10% less than they can get in a local area, they're not going to stay. They got a beautiful view here. They got fresh air. But they don't have the 10% that goes in their wallet. And I think we're looking for trouble if we don't pick it up. There was a saying went around a few years ago about just say no. I think you people on the board, it's your duty to say no, so you can get more money for the police department and the fire department that's going to defend you when you need help. I'm dead serious about it. I have one more thing to say. It's not on this subject, but I think somebody should write a letter to our local fast food restaurants. They're out there every morning at 7 o'clock in the morning hosing down their driveways. They're using more water than everybody on the board put together. Thank you. Remember the police and fire. They're very important to us.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. I'm Walter Heath. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I'm the current chapter co-director of the San Luis Obispo County Chapter of Healthcare for All, which is a statewide organization of volunteers who is trying to gain veto-proof passage of State Senate Bill 840, which is which would establish a single-payer health care system and a medical payment system for all Californians. I'm here tonight to ask the council to re-endorse State Senate Bill 840 in 2008. Morro Bay had the distinction of being the site of the first event, public rally, on August 12, 2006, that started a 365-day campaign of raising public awareness in every California city and town. And as a result, we feel that Morro Bay got the ball rolling, and a recent California field poll shows that shows a 12% increase from 24% of California voters to 36% of California voters of people who support a single-payer system as the solution to in health care reform in California. So I thank you for that, and I hope that you will consider re-endorsing Senate Bill 840 in 2008. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter, and I would ask you, beg you, please, pull item A2 and A3 from the consent agenda, because these items need to have a public hearing. Your decision, if you do approve these, will impact our neighborhood in ways that you are not considering, and you need much more complete and accurate information before you make any decisions. There are a number of unresolved problems that need light shined on them, and you need to allow the public to have an opportunity to give you input. So I would ask you to please pull these two items and have them a public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, I'm the only one that got the memo and dressed appropriately for the occasion. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Guy Wallace. I'm the chieftain for the Central Coast Scottish Society. Central Coast Scottish Society was founded in 1983. It's a nonprofit organization. Our members include Scots, Americans, and Canadians of Scottish descent, and non-Scots alike. Membership into the Central Coast Scottish Society is open to anyone who has a love of, interest in, or passion for Scotland, Scottish history, travel in Scotland, Scottish genealogy, clan history, things like Scottish languages, Gaelic, the old Scots language, storytelling, Scottish cultural endeavors like music and dance. We promote Scottish athletics, including the heavy athletics. Including the Morro Bay Shinty team, which was started here, only the second Kamanak team in the United States. We have members who have take interest in Scottish culinary, whiskey tasting, Scottish religions, Scottish animal breeds. As the chieftain, I'd like to say that if you have an interest, a Scottish interest, that we're not involved in, bring it on. We'll make it happen. But why I'm here is this Saturday, we are putting on a reader's theater piece right here in this fine facility at 2 p.m. It is called A Stranger Came Ashore.
For the past 10 years. I mentioned that I'm a retired law enforcement officer, and I've been a private investigator for 30 years. And the reason for that is because it's in my background. I'm here to talk about the police department tonight. Again, I was very encouraged by Tim's report to you folks. The front half of it, anyway, was very encouraging. But it's not going to cure our problem. The main problem we have right now, and as I'm standing here at this moment, the problem is backup. There isn't any. If an armed person, a robber, a mugger, rapist, whatever you want, is holding somebody a hostage, or there's a call that an officer is needed, the chances are we don't have two guys to send in there at the same time. We have to wait for somebody else, another agency, I mean, they even call on the on Smokey the Bear over here in the park to come help sometimes. And that's okay. You know, help is help. But I even volunteered to ride around. They said, we can't use gray-haired old guys like you because there's laws against it, number one. And number two, I'd have to go through the academy. And Tim doesn't want some old man like me guarding his back. And it's just not right. Our guys are going to other departments. We're going to lose three right away. I can almost promise you that. We need a 15% raise, 15% minimum, to bring us into line to try to hold our people and recruit new ones. We need people. So when the 1199 call goes out, officer needs help, there's going to be somebody there. You can count on your house, everybody's house, everybody in this audience's house being safe because they'll be there. And that's not the case right now. And I thank you, and I hope you'll consider that.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterveld, resident of Morro Bay. A couple quick items. I have been remiss in thanking Ron and Mike Myers of Myers Drilling for volunteering their crane for the use at the Harbor Festival this year. And I want to thank George League for asking them to position that in front of his establishment. I don't know if you know how much it costs to run that crane. I sure as heck do, because I saw it rolling down to my job one day. So I want to thank them again very, very much. Also, this past week at the Rotary Club, the Cruising Morro Bay Car Show distributed funds. The Rotary Club, the Police Explorers, Post 43, and the Chamber of Commerce each received $5,300. So that was a good little distribution for the country, for the economy. Just want to reiterate again our courtesy reminder of all the people who are supporting the backing for the police department. It is just a general reminder of what your job is, and I know that you're working on it. We do not hear anything about it as of yet, so hopefully in the future here we will get some kind of a report on what we can do. And obviously it does make a lot of sense to keep officers here who have a long history of 6 years, 7 years, and 9 years here. New recruits are okay, but don't forget they have to spend an awful lot of time, and I believe it takes somewhere between over $80,000 just to put a new recruit on the streets by himself. And so I could see a better use of the $80,000 going into our people who have a lot of history here and a lot of knowledge of the town. Thanks very much, folks, and Merry Christmas and holiday seasons to you all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to stop public comment at the end of the row there because we've got to get to our public hearings. Everybody who's seated there will be on, and then we have to get to our public hearings. All right, and Roger. Roger's the last speaker. Okay.
Well, those Scots are some brave lads, I'll tell you. I'm wearing my long underwear tonight. I'd like to speak on two items. First, I know it's popular to...
Can we tell your name?
John Varda.
Thank you.
It's popular to knock our state water supply reliability, and I'd like to set the record straight on that. About a week ago, the state released its early water delivery schedule. They do two schedules a year, one in the fall and one in February or March. And they're very conservative in their first report, and this is their promise to deliver. They consider conservative projection hydrology, operational constraints, and they include in that the 2000 Delta export restrictions on the federal court from the Delta smelt. Having done all of that and issuing their most conservative report, the results are in. And what this shows is that the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water District will be receiving 100% of its requested allocation for the next year. So I'd like to make it clear that the naysayers have been wrong once again, and they'll have to wait at least another year before they can pull a dark cloud over our town.
Hi there, I'm Bill Martini. And I'm also here to request a public hearing for, I believe it's A2. I know Dorothy Cutter mentioned A2 and A3. Actually, Jay Coakley, who's behind me, it's A1 is a water lease site that is 30 through 33, and I think that's fine, and there's no issues. The real issue on The Norm Arnold lease site that we would actually like to be pulled for a public hearing is primarily parking. We talked in August about the problem with the parking and overburdening the neighborhood. It really came around when, for lack of a better word, the land side was overbuilt with inadequate parking. And now there's a lease site that requires 5 parking spots. On 225 Main, when you throw the 5 parking spots on top of the so-called grandfathered-in rental units, you're coming up with a boathouse, a lighthouse, a main house, and 5 parking spots, and there's just not enough parking. And I really think until the parking issue is solved, that it should be kept on a month-to-month. There are options. I know even the neighbors to the south, even ourselves, I mean, there's other options for that lease site should parking not be found. The point being is there is actually parking at 225 Main Street. So the owner actually should, first option, be required to put the parking on the property. It's an interior of that property is empty now. We had in the past even talked about working out some type of easement to get parking there. That's still an option. 225 Main Street does not legally have the right to put boat slip parking at 206 at the Windmill House. What it basically stated was those 5 parking spots are actually for the land at 225 Main. It doesn't say for water lease site 34. And those parking spots can also disappear or go away if 225 is remodeled. So there's really, it's an in-depth parking issue. The neighborhood's been burdened. People have been having to walk in the street because of parking, cars parked in the sidewalks. So I just suggest before it goes forward to keep it on a month-to-month, have public discussion, and try and actually come up with a good parking solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council and City Staff. My name is Beverly Abbey, Morro Bay resident. I'd like to speak tonight about the 54th Street Channel in Morro Bay. This channel runs behind the Cloisters Complex and the Morro Bay High School. It carries runoff from Morro Bay streets and, when full, empties out into the protected dunes and the beach. Most people assume it's under the Morro Bay jurisdiction, but unfortunately, it is governed and owned by the San Luis Coastal Schools District. I walk in this area and pick up trash also on the adjacent path several times a week, and I'm continually horrified by the unbelievable amount of garbage in the creek. There are tree stumps, styrofoam, cans, aluminum, plastic bags, clothing, a chair, whatever. There was also an illegal, not permitted backyard construction project that was going on in the Cloisters' backyard with the tractor. He had planked it out over the creek, breaking down the banks and dislodging a lot of the sediment. The construction was stopped, but no repair was made to this area. I have called repeatedly to San Luis Coastal ground supervisor Arnie Selassie all year, to request cleanup, including the creek cleanup day, with still no response. At this time, my calls are not returned, although the reception staff is always very kind and said that he will call back. I am concerned about the gross pollution of our beaches because apparently when it empties out onto the beach, then it becomes the state's issue. But the potential for flooding over the creek banks due to excessive vegetation and sediment and junk is also an issue. I wonder what can be done with this. So I come before the council to ask if people are concerned about this. I know a lot of people walk on that path. This is the person to call. He's, I believe, an engineer. When I talked to him, he said he was an engineer. San Luis Coastal Schools ground supervisor Arnie Selassie. The number is 596-4105. If you can call, I'd really appreciate it. Maybe we can get something done, because I know the Park Service in the Cloisters area also is concerned about it. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Jay Coakley, 201 Main Street, Morro Bay. I'm on the agenda number A3. There's been some confusion. I was A1, A2, A3, but I am A3. tonight's the first night I heard a neighbor not very happy with this. I didn't realize that, because I really tried my best to make all my neighbors happy.
Events to put on, like Harbor Festival, Car Show, all the rest of them, and I shouldn't name any of them because I can't remember them all at the moment. We would like to have 2 hours of singers, dancers, jugglers, skits, lip syncing, comedy acts, and my personal favorite, drill teams. I think that the fire department could do a wonderful drill team, perhaps with some of the models that you have, the dummies, so to speak. Planning department with a bunch of plans marching back and forth. I'd love it. We're also going to be selling desserts, so we're going to be looking to the community to donate desserts, and then we'll sell them for outrageous prices to raise money. And it will be a very fun evening. We're going to do it at the community center. Hope everybody can get excited. I already put my foot in the mouth thinking that Johnny was on the Harbor Advisory Board and mentioning Dock of the Bay. I realize Eddie Ewing could probably play dynamite guitar, and somebody could sing Dock of the Bay. And, you know, start thinking about it. Start having fun with this, because we could just have a great old time on an evening all together in Morro Bay. So my phone number, my cell phone is 441-5770, and I'd be glad to kick ideas around and just start laughing about it, because I think it's going to be fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take any responses to comments that were made? Betty?
A couple real quickly. I'd like to clarify that the amount of water that the county requested this year is 100%, but that's because they requested less. And it was only for those, I believe that's true, is that Mr. Ambo requested for those of us who are purveyors and not the extra that they normally get. I'd like to mention a name that I forgot to do earlier during announcements. There's a man in our community that performed a service in Cayucas in terms of helping them clear up their Cayucas's sewer collection system, and has done benefits in other communities. He's lived in Los Sosos, Cayucas, Morro Bay, various places, and he's moving. That's the reason I'm mentioning it. Mr. Novato, and he's moving out of the area. I just wanted to give him credit for the good service he's performed here over the last decades.
Okay, any other comments? Yep.
Yeah, I would like to suggest that we direct our city manager to contact this Arnie Salacci fellow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because that's a real detriment to the city to have that walkway so polluted and trashy.
Madam Mayor, that does bring up a question for our city attorney. Would that not be a, quote, navigable waterway, in which case wouldn't that actually be something Fish and Game would care about? I mean, you can float a duck in it. It's a navigable waterway.
Probably.
So that would be, in addition to Mr. Salacci, I think Fish and Game would be a great agency to contact, because they're very much interested in water pollution in waterways like that.
Okay, we'll take a short break, and we'll get back to work. All right, we were going to try and get our consent agenda beforehand, but I think we're going to have to go straight to public hearings. Sorry, Rick. All right. So, item B1 is an extension of an interim urgency ordinance prohibiting the establishment of medical marijuana dispensaries. Rob?
Yes, good evening, Council. This is on your agenda again. It's been on your agenda previously. It requires 4/5 vote in order to extend the moratorium. The moratorium was extended approximately 1 year, and during that time, the law has fluctuated quite a bit of what the county is doing and what the federal government is doing. I started to begin the process of developing an ordinance that would allow medical marijuana dispensaries pursuant to your direction. That kind of took a turn when I was talking with other cities and doing research. Quite a few, instead of doing it from a zoning standpoint, has done it 6 months minimum. In the next 2 to 3 months, I can bring forward it's really a whole Chapter 5 rewrite now. It's kind of expanded in that. Chapter 5 is our licensing, and we've had some issues dealing with other businesses, massage parlors and some other ones that just aren't defined well. So I've decided to put them all into that permitting and go that route. And so this is a public hearing. It requires you to open the public hearing, have public testimony, and then close it. And, of course, the recommendation is that you continue on the moratorium until we can get regulations in place. If there's not a 4/5 vote, then obviously the moratorium goes away, and anybody can come in again in the C1 district and just apply for the license and obtain one without any permit conditions.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Betty?
I have one question. I'd like to see this done sooner than a year. Is there trouble with extending it to 6 months, or does that make you uncomfortable?
What I just said, the government code requires it to be a year, the second one, but you certainly can direct me as staff to come back. I think 3 months, once we get past this time of with the management audit and that, my calendar is loosening up. I had a lot of litigation, but I certainly, if you want to give me a time frame of 3 months, then I'll live with that and do it. But the government code requires a year.
Okay, thank you. And just, I'm sorry, one follow-up. Could you distinguish the difference between licensing and zoning issues? Like, what's an example of one as opposed to an example of the other?
Yeah, under a zoning, you look at it more from a land use issue and determine you have to go through the CEQA process and have to go through the Planning Commission and through City Council. Through your licensing requirements, there still could be, the application would still come probably directly to the City Council, but there'll be licensing requirements, so there won't be really a zoning designation to it. We will determine, at least the way it's being written right now, that it can't be near certain types of other businesses and off of the visitor serving. What I've basically done is just, instead of saying it can be allowed in the C1 or it can be involved in the visitor serving, it states it's allowed. Here's all the conditions you have to make as far as background check and other issues you have to go through, all of those requirements that I believe in my staff report, some of those are listed.
Yeah.
As opposed to a zoning is strictly a land use process like any other one, and you don't look into the other stuff that you would in a business of this nature that I think we need to check into.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one for me. I'll probably vote to extend this, but I am curious. This is not a well-crafted state law, but the Supreme Court actually didn't knock it down. But then the California Attorney General upheld our law after he reviewed the Supreme Court. And I know that the previous vendor wasn't really running his operation as well as we'd like. I'm wondering, why go to all this bother if the feds are going to come in anyway? I mean, is there anything that allows us to tighten it up, given the lax state law that we have about this?
No, until it's resolved at the federal level, there's always going to be a chance that someone can come in and shut down the business from a federal level. I've done mounds of research on this. If you want to see it, I've got binders full of it. But one of the main issue with 420 and where it's beating its head against the federal is not so much on the marijuana issue. It's that 420 specifically says that these dispensaries, it actually doesn't even mention dispensaries, but the caregivers, it's supposed to be a nonprofit venture. And where the issue is these are definitely not nonprofit organizations. They are not. And that's really where they're coming down, is the amount of profit that's being made by these dispensaries. If you read the allegations in the complaints that have been filed, it's dealing with the profits that are being derived from these businesses as opposed to just the selling of the marijuana. So that's one of the issues they have to get resolved between the different federal agencies. They're kind of in a in a loop here in that they tell them, okay, you have to be a nonprofit organization. So you go to the IRS, and the IRS says, well, we're not going to give you a nonprofit status because selling marijuana is illegal. So they can't get the nonprofit status, but then the other part of the government is saying that because you don't have your nonprofit status, you must be for-profit, and therefore we're going to shut you down. So it's interesting issues that have to be resolved. I think sooner or later they will be. It's just I think they're going to be later than sooner. And there's nothing wrong with this. Like I said, I've kind of expanded it to dealing with all the other issues with other of these businesses that we've got that we might want to just regulate better from a licensing standpoint than a land use. So, but I'm with you. It might at the end of the day, we might do these regulations, and it might not do any good because until it's resolved at the federal level, we're not seeing any of the inquiries. Prior to the closure of the one in Morro Bay, we would receive monthly, maybe even weekly, inquiries about where your ordinance is, where
to say instead of in hopes of saying direct the city attorney to return within 6 months with that.
There it is.
Okay, I still second it.
Okay. Everyone clear on the motion? Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. And moving on to B2, this is a mixed-use project located at 214 Beach Street. Mike?
Good evening, Mayor, Council. This item was last before this council in the summer, June of this last year. Basically seeks to open a bed and breakfast establishment along with some a cafe and retail establishment on the ground floor at reuse of the building. The council considered that application. At the time, it was thought to be an appeal. Later, as I described in the report, deemed just no action by our planning commission, and so it was kind of a 2-1 decision at that level. And so this item is before this council to take final direction on what needs to occur with this application.
Would you mind if I asked a question of Mr. Prater right now?
Sure, go ahead.
I was watching the planning commission meeting last week. I sent you an email about this to give you a little heads up. Is there some difference between last week and this that when there's two, it gets denied, and I would believe that would send it back to your office?
No, and actually there's not a whole lot of difference. There's a slight difference in between this application and the one on Monday night.
They're both CVS and a mix of commercial, residential.
Right. Essentially, with the resolution that the council adopted that requires a 3 affirmative vote for any decision to be passed, a 2-1 when a body is only has 3 members and there's a split, a 2-1 vote is an effective kind of a denial de facto, which basically doesn't move the project anywhere forward or backwards. In the case of Monday night, 2 commissioners were absent and they had the ability to act on the motion at a later hearing date. So they will be coming back and we'll have a body of 5 members to hear that particular item. In this particular case, 2 members had to abstain because they were within 500 feet, and so we didn't have 5 members to make a final decision. So it must move forward at this level, and that's why it's before you.
It's before us because it was appealed.
No, that appeal was sort of taken back from our office.
It had
so it was not on appeal.
Okay. Thank you.
Continue.
Okay, so I'll continue with my presentation. So essentially this project has been asked to provide a traffic study and a number of elements that the council asked for. They've gone through that documentation. They brought this forward. It's in the staff report about the improvements that they are proposing to help facilitate the ingress-egress safety concerns. They've also added another visitor suite to the upper floor, and so that's kind of their project description and hopes to move the project forward. If council has any direct questions, I can ask those.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
Just any? On the traffic study, you have some diagrams at the back of the, or actually pictures, I guess. And I cannot tell where the elevation of Beach Street starts. You know how it's kind of flat and then it goes down? Can you tell me, is it right at West Street where the hill starts to go down, or is it so many feet west of West Avenue? Like, I just like to know where that hill starts.
It's pretty much right at West Street.
At West is when it starts to go down. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions or staff?
Yeah.
Rick?
Mike, regarding the traffic study by OEG, on the first page, last paragraph, when it talks about how the restriping can be done to slow traffic and speed bumps and these kind of things, is that something that staff feels strongly about doing? Do we want to restripe it? And we're going along with all aspects of this traffic safety study?
Okay. Yeah, our staff would concur on this.
I think you're going to have to, I would like you to explain to us how you got to 12 grandfathered parking spaces when there used to be a bike shop there, and before, I think it was related to the fishing business. How did they get half?
Sure. As I explained at one of our previous meetings, the way grandfathering has been administered at this city since I've been here is you look at the past uses of a building, and the most intensive use that it has occurred over its lifetime is grandfathered based on the parking demand that's generated under our zoning ordinance. So we've looked at the square footage of the building, looked at all the uses that have occurred over the... I agreed that your calculations and methodology was correct.
Okay.
From a land use standpoint, a bed and breakfast establishment is considered a commercial operation. So, in a sense, the whole project is commercial.
Not the caretaker's quarters of 1,500 plus feet.
And if that's the position that council wanted to take, then your methodology would be correct, and 33% would be allocated for the caretakers.
And I would probably suggest that's 1,500 square feet plus the two-car garage that I think is deemed for the caretaker private use. But we'll check that with the applicant. Under CVS, it says that the single apartment unit or security quarters, which I think is what we call caretaker, when secondary to permitted commercial uses and on the rear one-half of a lot or upper story, and I believe it is at the rear one-half of the upper story now, since they use that other spot up front as another bed and breakfast suite.
Okay. Will the applicant please step forward and make your presentation and also answer questions when you're finished. So, okay.
Good evening. I'm Jeannie Hamlet. I own the building at 214 Beach Street. I think that we've responded and given you everything that was requested at the last meeting. So I hope to get approval. I can answer any questions or try to that you have.
Okay. Melody, would you like to rephrase your question again?
Could you tell me why you're putting a two-car garage in the back? Is that a private garage, or will that be open for public use?
For private use for my cars. So it does take two parking spaces, but those would be needed anyway.
Because you'll be the caretaker who lives there?
Yes.
Okay. And so, and then your two cars will go into that garage,
yes,
even though that's taken up two of your spaces and caused you to pay some parking in lieu?
If necessary, yes. I have to park someplace.
Okay. Everyone has to park someplace down there, I bet. Okay.
Any other questions of the applicant?
What is the access to the rooftop deck? I don't remember talking about the roof deck with anybody last time, but is there a inner or outer stairway to that decking up top?
Not at this time, no.
Okay.
The elevator was going to go to the rooftop to access for repairs or maintenance on equipment.
Okay.
But we were asked to remove that.
Okay. And so there is no use of the roof deck?
No.
Okay.
Okay. It's going to make all kinds of noise if I open this up. But I did want to ask about, do you still have an office for the coffee shop as well as the bed and breakfast unit?
I'm trying to remember the plans. Yes, that'll allow me a bedroom for myself plus an office. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It will allow me a bedroom, one bedroom for myself and one room as an office.
Okay.
So I'm condensing offices into one office rather than two.
Okay, so just one office for both businesses.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right, any other questions?
Yeah, I think I've got one, but
Bill?
I don't know if it's
okay.
Applicant. I'm perhaps belatedly curious about the effect and the efficiency of the traffic calming. What makes that traffic calming?
Well, I'll try to speak on behalf of our Public Works Department. Essentially what it does is it channelizes or formalizes the travel path for vehicles, lets them know where they are to travel, where bicycles are to travel, where pedestrians are to walk. And by doing that, it narrowing the roadway to a 12-foot lane will inherently causes the traffic to go slower. Right now, it's unmarked, and it's the full width is paved, and so the perception is that is you have a lot more room, but when you have visual cues as to where you need to drive, it slows you down as a driver.
So you don't think that somebody, if they're going fast, will just kind of like run over into the bike lane, since there's nothing to keep them from driving in the bike lane anyway?
I think physically that could occur, but I think that's what it's a visual cue as to where you're supposed to drive and negotiate your vehicle versus where pedestrians are supposed to operate.
Okay.
Any other questions? Melody?
If you're asking me, I entirely agree with Mike. It's kind of a friction element, and the tighter the lane configurations get, whether they're absolute or striped, tends to slow traffic down, and that's what studies have shown in the past. It just tends to slow.
Do we know statistically or percentage-wise, like they slow 7%, 5%?
Agreement whereby you're actually renting or paying for some of their spots and a contract signed, they get a little bit nicer about things. We just learned about this in the parking management plan.
It's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rick?
Yeah, just a comment for clarification on the how much it slows down on the calming striping. It's 3 to 5 miles an hour is what it says on the traffic report on page 2.
Okay. We'll open it to public hearing, and then we may have some other questions that come up.
Thank you very much.
Steve Seamus, owner of property 213 Beach Street. To answer your question, it's not available. I need it for the tenants who I rent to, and it is a private parking lot, and I have no interest in sharing it because we do need it. When both units are rented, it takes all the parking that we do have. And secondly, I'd like to say that, you know, Beach Street has never been posted. There is not a 25-mile sign on Beach Street anywhere. I've never understood that because nobody knows what the speed limit is there. And that's something I think that has to be addressed. And also the parking on Beach Street. When we talk about Beach Street, really what I need to refer to is like real estate word, location, location, location. We have the problem between West and Scott Street. When you get further up on Beach Street, we don't have a problem. Number one, there's all off-street parking. But in that particular unit, by experience with the property that we own, if we're going to do anything there, which people who own land have the right to do, we have to consider when you read this report from the OEG, I don't think anybody could agree that's a low-volume street, period. And if you're going to park on that street, and with a vision the way they're speaking about, you would have to have a signpost, no motorhomes, no fifth wheels, and no trucks. Because we have that problem coming out of our parking lot. When a trailer parks are on a weekend or a holiday, you have a hard time getting out of there to see around because the traffic's coming up the hill and coming down. So the parking is a real problem. And as far as in lieu fees, it does not solve a problem on Beach Street. And as I say, further up Beach Street, we don't have a problem, but that is the parking problem in that area. And we have to address it because we can't compare it to just being part of Beach. It's a real problem area. And that's what I'd like you to really consider because we have to find some way of working that out. There's a lot of problems, and they're not going to go away. And as we get more and more traffic, we have a larger problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. And first, I'd like to tell you that this is a public hearing. And as a member of the public, we are being denied any visual information pertaining to this project. There's absolutely nothing on the board for us to see or for our fellow citizens at home watching on television to know what's going on with this project. And I resent staff continually showing up to meetings with projects and not having visual information for the public at large. I am opposed to this project as it's currently presented for two reasons. This is a commercial visitor-serving zone, not a mixed use. And staff is continually using mixed use applications in commercial visitor-serving zones to establish residential properties. A 1,500 square foot residential caretaker unit goes against everything in our codes, zones, and ordinances. 600 to 900, 1,200 max, they keep pushing. Now they're asking for 1,500 square foot residential security, caretaker, whatever you want to label it. This building, this application is a residential application. Pure and simple. 1,500 square feet. That's a lot of residential property. In a commercial zone, we are losing commercial. You are allowing your planning staff to continually push residential over commercial. And that's wrong because we're losing our tax base in the process. The second thing, I believe this project will put the city at risk, great risk, because of its location and because of the hill. The incline going up from the Embarcadero to this location. Standard traffic design plans are one thing. Hills are another. So please be very, very careful.
I have never had any trouble whatsoever going into our planning department and saying, I would like to look at the plans you have on file for this proposed project. There's never any hesitation to make them available. Anybody can go in and do that. The agenda tells us what's going to be on there, and I don't see any need for that complaint. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. I think it would be helpful, Mike, if you put the sketch that was the traffic report with the views that it shows. I think that's something we may want to talk about. I do anyway. Okay, anybody have other questions or you want to go straight to comments?
Well, I'd like to make a quick comment here about this thing about visuals, and with all due respect, I was at home watching the Planning Commission meeting on Monday night, ranting in my living room, screaming, "Where's the picture? Where's the picture?" And I'm on the city council. I know this stuff inside and out. But I want to see the picture, you know, the diagram, as people are getting to look at now. So I think there's some credibility to that statement.
Penny?
I'd like for, and I guess it would be, since the engineer's not here, maybe Mr. Prater could reconcile for us. In one place in the staff report, it says you need the 100 feet for visuals. And yet he's offering 15 feet. And is it just the planter that allows that extra visual? I don't understand how to reconcile that.
What the recommendation was from the traffic expert, so to speak, was that an additional 15 feet needed to be painted red curb exiting the driveway to this property, and that would provide you the distance that you needed.
Okay, then does that take away any frontage parking, whatever? And then does that create
15
more?
15 feet worth, yes.
Are you saying 50 or 15?
15 feet.
Oh, 15 feet. Okay. Was there not a place in the report that talked about a further distance going both directions to actually get a safety view?
Right. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about this distance from exiting the driveway, exiting the property, needing a distance of 150 feet in both directions of unobstructed view to be able to see. And in order to obtain that, 15 feet needs
each
to
be... direction?
No, just on...
just going down the hill?
Just going down the hill.
And why would you not need it going the other direction?
They indicated that they had the distance there.
That you could see it. Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions, too. One, and I know this is a problem. It's a problem on the Embarcadero, too, and I think we've probably rectified it with some signage as far as not parking RVs and trucks and campers where it blocks views from driveways. Is that something that we can do with signage? Can we just decide, yeah, we're going to do that? Or do you have to have traffic studies and things that indicate the need for that? Tim's nodding his head yes. You want to answer that one?
That's currently in the Muni code for the height restrictions on Embarcadero, so it takes some additions to that.
Okay. Because I can appreciate that. That's very difficult, especially on a street as well-traveled as this. The other question is, what is the percentage here? I know with our commercial mixed-use projects. Well, first of all, is this mixed-use and or commercial, or is this commercial use only?
I'd like some direction from council. Staff has established that a bed and breakfast is a commercial use.
Madam Mayor, I'd be happy to jump in. We have traditionally designated this as a commercial land use. It's commercial by nature.
Okay.
That's our recommendation. If you want to disagree with that interpretation and provide that direction to staff, then you're listening.
In commercial zones, we've been looking for mixed use to provide some housing. What is the percentage then between what you consider the resident part and the business part?
There is no absolute percentage. The
ballpark?
Concern that I believe that they heard the last time was that there was something imbalanced about it, and there appeared to be a little bit imbalanced in favor of residential, which made it just appear characteristically more residential. And there isn't an absolute code number specification requirement percentage.
No, I understand that, but what is it on this particular property? We've been trying to get 25%.
Right. If you look just at the caretakers component, that along with the office spaces equates to about...
What's the percentage that is allowed for that caretakers unit? And that's nowhere in the code where it's defined it has to be a percentage. So it's a little different than the other ones where you've dealt with a percentage in that this is completely different. But I think, you know, to deny a caretaker unit, then I don't think you'll have a bed and breakfast there because they are... It's a different type of scenario than your typical hotel.
Okay, so it looks to me like we have a couple of things to talk about. First of all, what we consider caretaker percentage and all of that. That's one issue. Another issue is going to be the traffic. So let's deal with them separately so we keep clear on that. Betty, you want to start with how you feel about the commercial residential caretaker issue?
I was going to start with the other one.
Okay, all right. Start with traffic. We'll start with
that's
traffic.
That's where my real concern is with the safety issue.
Okay.
And I think the issue that we raised last time was, do we have enough on-site parking? Mm-hmm. Knowing that we can allow in-lieu parking, from a safety point of view, do we have enough parking for those who will be using the facility? And then I guess my quandary came with, because we had concerns about site distance also, if we need to red stripe, and I was assuming both directions, but just one direction, that then takes away street parking as well. So it kind of reduces people crossing over. I think that was one of our main concerns. If they park on West Street or Scott Street, they have to cross over. There's no striping there. They'd have to go up to the next corner. So do we need to require striping for a sidewalk in the middle of the block there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that the engineer came up with a way to slow it at least a little bit, the traffic, and certainly whether we pass this or not, we need to do some posting of speed limit there. to get that going. So I'm glad to have that striping to actually officiate the bike lane would be good too. But I don't know if that's sufficient, and that's, I guess, what I'm willing to hear from others. My concern is still about that hill. If they can see all the way to the crest of the hill, that's as far as you can expect, because a car's coming up, you can't see beyond that anyways. Mm-hmm. So if that's been taken care of, I guess I was assuming we need to do some protection both directions.
Okay, Bill, traffic.
Okay, in coming up Beach Street from the Embarcadero, it has been my experience that traffic is probably not going much more than 25 miles an hour coming up the hill. I have also found, as my experience, that if you try to turn left on West Avenue coming up the hill, it's a little bit tricky just because of the sight distance and everything. You can't see traffic coming. Okay, having said that, that really has no bearing on this project other than to say those people coming up the hill are probably pretty close to 25 miles an hour. Those people going down the hill have probably never seen 25 miles an hour. And so I'm assuming that this traffic calming thing would work, and it would probably be beneficial to the whole street, because that way people coming up and turning north on West Avenue would have a chance. So there could be some benefit both ways on that. If, in fact, you could get traffic to go 25 miles an hour, then it's probably not hazardous and okay. You know, as far as requiring more parking or other things, I think we've sort of had the feeling we'd like to use existing buildings, and I don't see many ways to use this building where you're going to be able to provide enough on-site parking. I mean, it's either tear the thing down or kind of go with something like what they've got. And so I'm inclined to say if you can actually get 25 miles an hour out of it, then I could live with the traffic.
Okay. Rick?
I think the ratio commercial versus residence
is... We're talking traffic first.
We're on traffic right now.
Just traffic first.
Okay. Well, my only concern with the traffic is that it's just as important to post the no vehicle over 7 foot high as it is... the speed limit on there, because that more than anything is going to let you know how you can see or not. If vehicles over 7 feet high are allowed to park on there, then I see that as a real hazard. So that's the only thing the sign on the Embarcadero says, no vehicles over 7 feet high. So if we could do the same thing on that location, I would like that.
Okay. Melanie?
Sounds like we're going to mess up one of the access, the single most important access route down to the rock, and we're going to mess it up with all kinds of signage everywhere. I just have to say I was astounded by this traffic report saying there was no traffic on Beach Street, so I just don't believe any of it, including what it recommends. And I think the things that it recommends impede flow on the sidewalk, and you know, I'm sure that at some point there will be people who will get out of their car and get into a wheelchair, and they're putting planter boxes out. I would say to the applicant that I like the movement that you're making toward coming up that hill.
I'm not picturing where you're saying that would be.
When you're coming out the driveway of this thing, you come out the driveway of the thing, you trigger something by going across a motion detector, a cord, and on mounted on the outside of the wall on Beach Street would be a flashing red light. Have you've been to San Luis County government, I know. When you're going down Higuera, if somebody's coming out of that parking lot, that red light starts flashing. And you start to pull over and just go a little slower watching for them coming out.
So it's all on the property. It's not on public property. It's on the private.
It's all on the property.
Okay.
And so it eliminates all of this public signage and service and everything. And I think it's been very effective. It moves me over and slows me down, like what's happening, who's coming out, you know. And I think it would be lower cost, actually, than the planter boxes and all that other stuff that they were suggesting. So that's what I think about the traffic. Have we talked about parking yet?
Yeah, well, it's part of traffic, yeah. We're talking about
I'll
parking
throw in too. Parking. I've never believed that parking in lieu creates parking. I'd like to cut that garage out of the back. If this is a caretaker's quarters and caretaker parking, I think it should be viewed a lot like we view employee parking in other commercial areas, and that is that the employee parks up the street or down the street, and then they go to work. I would imagine that this person is probably going to live there, and you probably get first choice at a parking place and back. But I think taking two up and putting a parking structure over it just denies the availability of it for other people who, customers who could park there. So I'd probably be in favor of, and I know that we're going to do the parking in lieu anyway, but I'd also be in favor of cutting that built structure in the back. I think it also begins to create a spaciousness in that parking lot and back for people, and it also provides automatically two more parking spaces and gets them off the street. So that's just my ideas. But you probably likes one and not the other.
All right. My traffic concerns, I like the idea of striping that street. I think that's a good idea. Anyway, who would pay for that, though? Is that something the applicant pays for? The whole street?
From Embarcadero to Market.
From Embarcadero to Market. Okay. That's a lot of striping. Okay. I think that would be an advantage on that street anyway. It's always been a difficult traffic street just because of the speed of people going downhill. The parking, it's funny because we're talking about this should be commercial, and yet commercial means more parking. It means more traffic. It means more of everything that we're complaining and concerned about. So we got a real catch-22 here. If you want it to be commercial, then you're going to have to put up with the fact that there's going to be people parking there and there's going to be traffic. If you want it to be residential, then you reduce that. So if we want it to be commercial, we just have to accept the fact that we're going to have a need for parking. We're going to have people parking around there. I did drive around, and I figured out there's probably about 15 to 20 spaces within a half-block walk. So if we have a coffee shop here, they're going to be able to walk it. They're going to get there okay. I like the idea of the flashing light. That sounds interesting, but if that's not feasible, then I think the planter works in protecting people from coming out, from cars coming out of the driveway. That's not onto the street. That's just for pedestrians and being concerned about them seeing the car coming and the car seeing them. I like the red curb in the front. I think that answers the view of people coming up from the Embarcadero. And I did. I drove it a couple of times saying, okay, where could I see somebody on that street? And it really isn't until you're just almost at the crest of the hill that you could see a person. So I do like the red curb in front, which means, again, that the people that are going to these establishments are going to be parking elsewhere or in back. The caretaker unit in the garage, I'm indifferent about that. Obviously, if you're going to have a bed and breakfast, you've got to have somebody live there. Bed and breakfasts don't run themselves. They have to be run by someone who is in residence the whole time. So that, and to have someone in residence the whole time and have their car there, yeah, I think they could have a garage. All right, so parking and traffic, where are we? It sounds like we all want striping, yes? Are we all in favor of that?
You know, I'm gonna just say that cities stripe their streets. And if there's no striping on the street, the city should stripe it. I don't want applicants coming in here.
But I can tell you right now, it isn't such a priority that we would do it with the limited funds that we have right now, given the current condition of it. No.
Ballpark number, just a number.
You know, the last one we did all that striping. I think it was we got a lot of striping. We got pretty much citywide all the bike lanes, and it was about 30,000, I thought, somewhere in the neighborhood of that. It's I would say it's a few hundred to 1,000 or so. It's not
so 1,000 or under would probably stripe these three blocks.
We'd prefer to fix potholes with it than stripe somebody else's situation.
All right, so there's our potential cost of striping. I'm trying to get some kind of consensus on issues here. Are we agreed that striping should be required and paid by the applicant?
Yeah, at this point.
Okay, we seem to have a majority on that. Okay. Well, we got four in consensus. Okay. Posting for higher vehicles, are we in agreement that that's necessary? Okay.
Madam Mayor, I think that's a must. We routinely have sometimes boats, sometimes a bobtail truck on Pacific, and if you're coming out of one of those streets near the post office, it really impacts your sight distance. So I would say you have to have something you can see over.
Okay.
We'd have to prohibit those.
Are we satisfied with the parking that's being provided?
No.
No, but...
Is there a way to add some more slots here?
You got to have a turnaround. That's the problem. They got to be able to back out of those spaces and turn around to go front out of the driveway.
And that turnaround could be created if you lost the garage.
How wide is that garage?
Mike, how wide is the turnaround area in the back?
The garage is about 21 feet from exterior side to exterior side. The space is, if it wasn't a garage, it would just be two open spaces,
essentially.
There isn't really, you don't gain a whole lot of space by not having the garage as far as parking.
But if there wasn't a structure there, could you add a couple of parking spaces?
No, there's not enough space to add any more parking.
Okay,
so are we agreed that the parking is as good as it can get?
No.
And do we have suggestions for how it can get better?
You know, where this is going to end up is we're probably going to have to send this back for a discussion of issues. And so I hope we're just going down through the issues.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay. So.
All right. Do we have suggestions on how the parking can get better?
No. I think staff is adept at this, and the applicant has a representative, I'm sure, and they can find it out. I've made one suggestion, but nobody likes it, so... Do you have a suggestion on how to make the parking better?
I think they've got as many spaces that they're going to get. Okay, so, all right. The safety issue of coming out of the driveway. Melody suggested a red light. They're suggesting planters. Are we okay with either of those working?
I'd like the red light investigated. I think it'll be less expensive and more effective.
I think investigating that's a good idea.
Okay.
Or some kind of alternative tool.
All right.
I'm okay with either one. You know, I think we need to look at this and say no project is perfect. We're taking one of the most blighted areas in this city and dressing it up a little bit. Okay? And thank God that this applicant is willing to come out and dress it up for us and put some makeup on it because it looks like crap. So, you know, keep in mind, none of these projects are going to be perfect. But let's make it as good as we can. We've done the safety study, which was the big deal to me. I think we need to move on.
Okay. Betty?
Just one suggestion. The advantage to un-garaging the two parking places is then it becomes available for all business customers downstairs. So right now, and even if you allowed one parking space for the live-in person, I don't know that we would normally even really require two for a security apartment. But if you uncover it, you now have six spaces available to customers as opposed to four. That's assuming that the person who lives up there but she indicated that she has two cars. So, but it seems to me, and if, you know, it changes hands, then again, you have more spaces available for the next business. So I guess I'm thinking now about maybe not making it a garage-type situation, but then that freeing up that area to become literally a parking lot.
Is there any requirement for a covered garage on this?
No.
Okay. So it could just be covered parking.
The requirement under the building code to be bedrooms. So technically they wouldn't be allowed to be a bedroom.
Wait, what is that requirement? Because my house may not meet code. This is 12 foot 9 inches wide.
You have to have an exit out of that doesn't go into an intervening room.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I see it exiting into a hallway. Both of them exit into hallways.
And that's not allowed. So those spaces.
It isn't?
No. Not under the building code.
We don't allow people to build 12-foot square bedrooms that exit onto hallways.
No, they have to have an exit to the outside.
What?
What?
A window.
What are you talking about?
A window is considered an exit under the building code. So they would have to have a window that would lead to the outside. And
so
it's
the
a certain size and dimension.
Oh, because one is an interior room.
Right, these are interior rooms.
And the other one is just blocked, basically.
Right. So under that definition, they wouldn't be allowed to be.
But is it true, then? There's two offices up here. True. The cafe will have an office, and the caretaker will have an office.
They're still there.
Would the applicant like to come up and respond to that?
The larger room is going to become my bedroom, and then I'll condense the others into just two offices into one room.
So the caretaker office is going to become your bedroom, you mean?
Yes, because okay. The rest have all been turned into B&B suites.
But that's the one that you're not allowed to have the
bedroom. Yeah, under the building code, they wouldn't be allowed to do that.
Or vice versa.
So.
Wait, now the building code would allow it?
Would not allow either office to be a bedroom because they do not have a way to exit that room.
I think that's going to lead to further conversations with the applicant. Then the other thing I was wondering about, and I'll check this with staff, but you might want to weigh in on it. I see these little dividers in between walls. I don't know what exactly how to read all these drawings, but is there some way that we can add a condition that would keep this the way we approve it eventually and not have it become condoized or something later on?
Yeah, you can add a condition to that effect.
We can add a condition to that, Rob? Mr. Schultz, we can? It's a little effect that's happening in Morro Bay.
Yes. It wouldn't even be allowed. Right now, at least, it wouldn't be allowed under zoning because then condos would be for residential purposes.
In the CVS.
CVS.
Okay. Then we probably have protection by the zoning as long as that lasts.
But you could also deed restrict it.
Okay.
Okay, well, it looks like we have a major problem in that the applicant's residential areas, neither of them are allowed as a bedroom unit. So there's going to have to be some redesign before this can be approved, as far as I can see. Does anybody see any way around that?
Mm-mm. Not really. She's kind of pulled it over here.
So I'm sorry, but this is going to have to go back to the drawing board.
Just the second floor.
Yeah. Second floor. You've got our input on the parking issues and things, but this is something that we can't approve this, given the way it is. The two areas that you're saying you want to live in, neither one of them has an outdoor access.
And I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Because I've got to live someplace, and we keep cutting away rooms,
right?
Taking away from my private space to fit the zoning and requirements.
I think you really need to look at that second floor again.
Madam Mayor,
yes,
originally the plan was that visitor suite 2 was the master bedroom.
Right.
If you included that as part of the caretaker's facility, that would bring it to the 33% mm-hmm. caretaker.
But then if you've got your other visitor's room with no outside access, that's not legal either.
No, they actually have visitor suite 1 has a balcony.
All right, now you need to put that on the overhead so we can all see it, because we know what you're talking about.
Well, I can see what he's talking about, and frankly, we can't.
Yeah, there's visitor suite 1, but if you have visitor suite 2 behind it, then it doesn't have an access.
Yes, but if I could say we cannot have, I don't want to go backwards on this project. She's made a lovely movement forward in giving me two visitor-serving suites on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And by code, the caretaker unit has to be secondary to this and to the rear of the upper story.
Yes.
And on the upper story, she's not quite secondary, but she's at least to the rear. What you need to do is to take a look at either of these offices, either as you wish, whichever has a view of something. I'm not sure what has a view.
None of my rooms.
But to figure out...
All right. Item B3, reconsideration of payment to the Visitors and Conference Bureau. Andrea?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The City of Morro Bay, as you know, allocated $10,000 in the fiscal year 2007-2008 budget for membership payment to the County VCB. As a result of the substantially lower number of services and programs provided to the city by the VCB as a result of the funding level, discussion has occurred between the city and the VCB, and the city's payment has been postponed. A little bit of history for you. The City of Morro Bay has been a member of the County VCB, which is Visitors and Conference Bureau, for many years. Early in 2007, the city received a correspondence from the VCB indicating a funding request of approximately $34,000 for fiscal year 2007-2008 and $32,000 for fiscal year 2008-2009. That correspondence also provided information on the VCB's fair share funding formula, which determined funding levels for each city and addressed the concerns of the public sector, which was a perception that some of the cities were funded at a higher level, were funding at a higher level to recoup the lack of funding from other cities. The VCB indicated at the full funding level they requested, again, the $34,000 for this fiscal year and the $32,000 for next fiscal year, the city would enjoy a number of benefits, which are outlined in your staff report. The city received a second correspondence from the VCB at the end of April 2007, reiterating the funding request and the fair share formula. The city manager responded on May 3rd with a letter regarding the continuing financial situation of the City of Morro Bay and emphasized that staff had proposed the same level of funding as was given the prior year of $10,000. Thereafter, the city was informed the VCB Executive Committee had recommended to the VCB Board of Directors a list of partial services that would be extended to the City of Morro Bay due to their limited funding level of $10,000. In early September, the city manager informed the city council about the list of partial services that would be afforded the city of Morro Bay at the funding level of $10,000. He also asked the VCB for a formal description of the reduced services and a description of the effect of the decision on the city, which would then be forwarded to the council for formal review. Lastly, he instructed the VCB not to obligate any further funds or remaining Morro Bay membership funds until the city council had the opportunity to consider this issue. On September 18th, a letter was sent sent to the city outlining the partial and full funding services, describing both, and staff then replied with a follow-up letter requesting more clarification, to which Ms. Biagini responded and explained some of the information on the September 18th correspondence, and also let us know that the City of Morro Bay would have no exposure on the homepage of the VCB's website. Based on the background provided tonight, we have brought this issue back to you for discussion, as the benefits of the city now is receiving for their $10,000 have been decreased dramatically. And that concludes my staff report. I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Andrea? Okay. We do have Johnny here from the VCB, so I'm going to ask her to make a presentation to us, and then we'll open the public hearing for everyone else.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Johnny Biagini, Executive Director of the San Luis County Visitors and Conference Bureau. And our campaign for funding kind of mirrors the presidential campaign in that it's taking a long time. And I don't have any star power like Oprah or Chuck Norris with me, but I do have lots of other stars that I think are very important to Morro Bay. John Solu, Alex Amini, Pradeep Patel, a number of hoteliers in Morro Bay that I think are all-star people and that are members of the Visitors and Conference Bureau who sorely need additional funds to help promote them. Our Board of Directors established a fair share formula that is in effect this year, in part because of many of the conversations that we had with this council over the past 3 years. Our board recognizes fully the financial situation that Morro Bay is in, and for the past several years has taken that very seriously into consideration. As you reduced our funding for the last 3 years, we provided full benefits without question. It has been a difficult time in terms of showing benefit or showing fair share benefit to all of the cities, as you can imagine. And I think you all know that it takes money to do what we do, which provides benefit to all the businesses like no other organization can do, all of which made our board's decision more difficult to establish a formula-based annual funding, and provide maximum benefit to the cities that have funded at a fair share formula rate, the full funding, and still provide that benefit to them. The decision that our board made was purely a business decision to secure the full funding that we currently receive from all the city for the city of Morro Bay, full benefit, marketing benefits this year, knowing that this city is in these financial straits.
Okay, questions for Johnny? Betty?
Two items. The criteria that you chose, is the do your members feel that that's, I mean, you drafted that criteria. Are you willing to look at other kinds of criteria for what, how you figure your formula?
The fair share formula?
Uh-huh.
This fair share formula was developed by the board of directors over a number of months. In fact, it probably was discussed for over a year. And it is a difficult formula. Nobody is completely happy with it. It takes into account the bricks and mortar of a city in terms of the number of hotel rooms that a city has, and a daily rate, if you will, or a rate spread across the entire county, averaged based on the TOT. It reflects what the industry contributes to an individual city. If there's a better way to do it, we're happy to look at it, but this year, at this point, this is the formula.
And then my other question slash probably comment is, I know for a number of years, or at least since I've been on the council, that the city was regularly paying $60,000, way higher than other cities had been before there was a formula. Others were paying $5,000, maybe $10,000, that were larger than we were, and so we paid a long time. So it sounds like once you formalized this formula, that history kind of doesn't count and you're just moving forward. Is that how that kind of worked?
Not exactly. We did not receive $62,000 from the city of Morro Bay consistently over the past 20 years. It has grown as the transient occupancy tax or the tourism benefit in Morro Bay has grown, just as it has grown in other cities. The formula to that has now been achieved has answered that question, why should Morro Bay pay $62,000 when another city with a similar number of hotel rooms pays far less? That was the reason for the fair share formula, and that's why we're going forward. Keep in mind, for the past 3 years, at a greatly reduced amount, we have provided all of the benefits that all of the other cities have been given when they are funding at a much greater level.
Thanks. Bill? Rick?
Hi, Joni. Just for clarification, you were saying if an additional $10,000 was placed on the $10,000 that was earmarked, we would get full
marketing
value for the year.
Right.
Now, is that the year that ends in 2 weeks, or is that a fiscal year?
I'm sorry. We're on a fiscal year, so July 1 to June 3.
So, okay. And how long... How long have we been under the partial funding as far as...
Just since July.
July. And that's when we became not eligible for these things that full funding gives you, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That's all I have. Thanks.
Melody, any questions? I've got one, and this is on a comment out of your letter of April 30th of this year where you said, Morro Bay's allocation of $10,000 is 1% of your entire annual budget, yet almost 63% of the total value of public relations that was generated is about Morro Bay. How is that? How are we getting 63% of the benefit when the county's paying $300,000? I mean, that doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, I took the amount of the value of the public relations that we were able to garner for Morro Bay, and that was the percentage of the total value that we've given the whole county in public relations.
And you gave 63% of the total value of the whole county to Morro Bay?
That's what it came out to be. We have done a lot of work for Morro Bay.
I guess I'm not seeing it. I guess I don't understand. I mean, we've gotten several hundred hits from the website. I know that, but we've gotten up to a million on our own website. I guess I'm just not seeing how we're getting more than half of the benefit of all this advertising.
When you take all of the articles that we helped to generate about Morro Bay and put a dollar value of what that would cost to buy that space in those publications, Morro Bay has received a tremendous amount of coverage because of our efforts.
Okay.
That value, compared to what we've done for the whole county, is whatever I said in that letter,
okay.
63% or whatever.
What is the situation with Paso Robles? I understand they're not contributing now?
At this point, they have not decided to contribute because they are still working with their newly formed promotions committee.
Okay. And if they did decide to...
Good evening, Mayor Peters, members of council and staff. My name's Ed Biagini, a hotel owner here in Morro Bay. I think all of you know my position on my request that you support the Visitors and Conference Bureau, but so I'm not going to take up time for that. Hopefully you all received an email from Stan Trapp, and I don't know if those of you had a chance to read it or not, but I'd like to read that letter into the record if I might with the time that I have, and I think he speaks for most all of us in the organization that belong to the Visitors and Conference Bureau. It goes, Madam Mayor and Council Members, since it is an established fact that the City of Morro Bay does not have an industrial base or other large revenue generators, we rely upon tourism to drive our economy and support the city's infrastructure. Because of this dependency, it is only logical that a great deal of support plus funding be given to expanding this revenue base through increasing the level of tourism in Morro Bay. While we certainly have our attractions, Morro Bay does not have the brand name recognition enjoyed by our neighbors such as Monterey and Santa Barbara. As a result of not having immediate name recognition, the greater the distance traveled by the tourist, the more Morro Bay needs the County Visitors and Conference Bureau's services. While our local Chamber of Commerce does a wonderful job in creating new events and attractions in Morro Bay, and our Promotions Committee has been very creative in advertising the qualities of our community to our visitors, neither has the infrastructure and combined budget to reach out to vast numbers of distant, out-of-state, and international tourists. This immense group consists mainly of the undecided tourists who are looking anywhere attractive to visit. This group is new money. The combined resources of the county VCB give it greater ability to reach this audience than can be achieved by localized efforts. The VCB is the first contact for groups and celebrities seeking a venue for their events. As an illustration, Rachel Ray would not have known about Windows on the Water had she not contacted the VCB. Windows received in the first month of airing over 100 reservations from persons unfamiliar with Windows or Morro Bay. And the interest still continues with every rebroadcast. Can I quantify the effect of Rachel Ray's visit on Morro Bay per se? The answer is no. However, these visitors didn't just eat at Windows. They stayed in hotels, shopped, and ate their meals at other restaurants. In addition, we all recognize the impact that film companies, golf groups, and other tour groups have had on Morro Bay. And hopefully in the near future, we hope to share in conferences desiring to come to the Central Coast. For that, we will need to rely upon our relationship with the VCB. I urge the Council to fund the County VCB as a necessary revenue generator and not perceiving it as an unnecessary expense. Thank you for your consideration, Stan Trapp, Marina Square, and Windows on the Water. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi. I'm Joan Solu, and I own the Days Inn on the corner of Beach and Main Street there. And, good evening. I have with me some signed copies of support for the funding for the County and Visitors and Convention Bureau from 39 members of the VCB in Morro Bay, and I'm going to submit that to Bridget. And also, I'm here tonight to let you know that I support the $10,000 payment and an increase in funding for the County VCB. I believe that funding for advertisement is crucial to the welfare of tourism in Morro Bay. Our city receives approximately 40% of its general fund money from the tax on tourism. That money is placed into the general fund to support the city. It stands to reason that if TOT is the single largest source of revenue for the city, then the city should support it to its full capacity. You must spend money to make money. Currently, our city is running at approximately 50% occupancy. If you use the 900-room formula, you will see that on any given day, there are at least 450 to 500 tourists visiting our city, which means they eat and drink in our restaurants and shop in our stores. And you know just as well as I do that there are 900 rooms in the summer and 90 in the winter. I know that there is an argument to be made that when we were funding the VCB at a higher rate, we didn't see increases in rooms, or that the VCB spends money promoting the entire county and not just Morro Bay. That may be true, but how would you quantify that statement? It is difficult to measure the value of every dollar we spend promoting tourism. I know that my business spends approximately $32,000 a year on promotion. Our website doesn't just promote our motel. We include information about shopping, theaters, kayaking, bird watching, restaurants, spas, golf, and other activities in our city. We even mention Hearst Castle and wineries, which are outside of our city limits. When we don't have business in the winter is when our promotional blitzes begin. We are a mini Morro Bay, pennies on the dollar.
Thank you. And I am passing around those petitions that I was given copies of. Anyone else? Nope. Okay, we'll bring it back to the council. All right. Any other questions?
One question probably for Johnny. And that is, do all counties have a VCB that covers the county like this, or is this pretty standard thing to do in a countywide basis?
We're relatively unique in a number of ways. There are some county VCBs. Monterey County has one, Sonoma County, Placer County. So we didn't set the deal, but a lot of them are multi-city or countywide.
Any other questions for Johnny? Okay. Comments? Betty, you want to start?
You don't have to. I picked on you last time. Okay, we'll start with Rick this time. Okay. Rick. And pass that to Melody so she can take a look while you're talking.
I think the $10,000 limit that we have that gives us partial funding is a complete waste, because I don't think we get anything for partial funding. We either do full funding or we do nothing. We as a council, I guess, need to decide if that $34,000 and $32,000 for the next year is the best use of our money. But certainly, partial funding, I think we shouldn't even consider. And I understand the VCBs, when they don't get their money, they're not going to work for us and promote us, and that's just the way things are. And I understand it. I don't have to like it, but I do understand it. That's business. So I'll pass it on to the next person.
Bill?
Just a correction. We're looking at $20,000 for full benefits, not $34,000.
She has authorization for this year.
Yeah, for this year.
Well, I certainly have no way of disputing the data that's given to us from the VCB, and I know anytime you can go out and advertise or promote to people, it's very beneficial. And I'm hoping that when someone accesses that website or sees the information, they're contacting the individual motel, because when you get 300 hits in a month from that website, as far as a link to us, and we can do a million here, it gets a little harder for me, but I'm assuming that a lot of those are going directly to the properties. I'm at this moment not, I think I'm willing to take up the VCB's offer of the $20,000 total, if we can do that. We just had a whole bunch of people here earlier tonight saying you've got to give a lot more money to your police department. And our firefighters are talking about wanting to negotiate with CDF so that they can actually get an honest salary. I think we hit a point where we're having to decide. We know the value of promotion. We know we have to promote. We know that we're trying to get the best bang for the dollar. So what I'm seeing on one side is this little formula that says, okay, we need to give these people $34,000, but we're not going to find it under a rock, which means we have to pull it back from somewhere else. And I've been reluctant to pull any back from our Visitors Bureau or our Promotions Committee, because I have felt consistently that they are doing a good job for us too, and I have maybe wrongly considered that they could be more effective for us on our dollar because they're talking about just us. So when it comes back to this $34,000 or $32,000, I have a hard time. In the interim, I would say let's consider their offer this time for the one-time deal and keep going for a while.
Now, Betty? I think this starts to get, I'll only speak to it this year because I think when we get to the bid item that's next, mm-hmm. it starts to get complicated or mm-hmm. fuzzy in my mind because it's more to the mix. So if we look at just the $10,000 for this year or whether to go to the $20,000 for this year, I think is where I'm going to come from mm-hmm. and look at it only as this year, not in terms of what may happen after this fiscal year. The city made a promise to pony up the $10,000, so in that sense, I feel obligated. I'm just the finances of that. So if someone can help with that.
Okay, Melanie?
I'd agree with almost everything that Mr. Pierce said. We keep investing more and more money in our local people here. Our promotions committee and our visitor center, we've got this new chamber director who is just dynamite. We've got a dynamite new website that gets millions of hits all the time. I went on the internet before the meeting and I just typed in, like I would if I was going to Berlin or anywhere else, I typed in Morro Bay. You know, what did I get? And I got the VCB still hosting us, but it was up in the Google ads, which I don't typically click on up there. I just look down in the white stuff. And I got morro-bay.com, morro-bay.net, morrobay.org, Morro Bay Us, you know. There was just Morro Bay Hotels. There was that, too. It's an abundance of hits I had. I'm looking at Paso having this new promotions committee, and they're now thinking about VCB participation. Pismo doesn't because they have the in-house person. And after attending a few events in this town, smaller events, very local events like the fire station, station opening particularly, I've thought, why aren't there more people here? And I started really reconsidering a little bit what Ms. Winholt's been talking about the last couple of years. So I would be fine with going for another 10, but I really don't want to use a whole lot of council time in a year from now thrashing this about, and 6 months from now thrashing this about. We're either with the VCB or we're not with the VCB. And I think that should be the issue for us in July next year. But for right now, fine, we were still there. I want to have my representation back as a city if I'm paying something into it. So, yeah, they've made a generous offer to carry us for another 6 months, but I'm not real convinced what will happen after that.
Okay. I guess I'm concerned with how this whole process worked. We went through a long back and forth, Johnny and myself, with emails about the fair share and how I did not feel that that was really a fair share. And obviously I can't change what the board of directors decides. But my reason for feeling it's not a fair share is that because the other cities have such a small percent of their general fund revenue represented by the TOT.
With Morro Bay, it's 21% of our general fund revenue. And that's a huge amount when that is what we are dependent on now. We don't have the backup of the other sales tax and property taxes that the larger cities have to make up that general fund difference. So that's why I think that the fair share given it just on the TOT is not fair, because it doesn't take into effect the percentage that that TOT represents in your overall city general fund. So I have a problem with how that's calculated. I also had a problem with some initial discussions that Paso, because they had their own visitors and conference center, was going to be able to pay less. And I guess that's off the table now. Fine. So we won't discuss that. I'm also concerned with the way this was handled as far as letting us know, okay, we knew we weren't paying the full amount and that we would get something less as far as service. I'm disappointed in that the way that was delivered to us and we were informed about the reduction in services was just sort of like, okay, here's what you don't get. And basically, it took away everything. I mean, we would not get anything that we didn't have to pay something for. In addition to our contribution, which I think was a little bit, I don't know, unfair and unreasonable given, again, the fact of how much this represents of our general fund. That said, I do recognize and appreciate the value of what the VCB does, and I recognize it in a way that perhaps the rest of you aren't familiar with, and that's filming. And I know how much filming comes through the county. It doesn't come straight to Morro Bay. Usually the first contact is with the Film Commission because that's supported by the county VCB. That's where the Film Commission is. That's where people make that contact. And we have seen the benefit of that this year. We had Lindsay Lohan, Whoopi, and we've had some other filming projects that have come here because of the VCB. I appreciate that. I did sit and talk with Joan and Ed and Stan Trapp after the business forum this week, and they spoke about the fact that if you're on the East Coast or in Europe or something and you're focusing on the Central Coast of California, there's where I'd like to go, you don't necessarily know about more than 20,000.
I would agree with your two points, that I'd like to see the formula looked at, and second, that there is value to this. I agree that Morro Bay's, for most people that don't know us, we're pretty little, and to see the bigger area, then they can come down and find us, I think is real important. The $20,000 is kind of odd to me in that half the year is gone. We haven't gotten that benefit. Paying the next $20,000 is almost like paying the full $30,000 anyway.
No, it's 20 total.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is if we had paid the 30 in the beginning, we're already halfway through the year where we haven't gotten any benefit. And so we're paying $20,000 or two-thirds for 50% of the benefit. And so it's a nice offer, but I don't know that it's necessarily bending over backwards, I guess is what I want to say. So if you can... can you help me think where we're going to... Are we going to take this out of the insurance money? Where are we going to get the $10,000?
Well, we certainly have that one-time funding, that found money, so to speak, which we can't pay salaries on because it won't be found again next year. So
I think we're ready for a motion, aren't we?
All right.
And I would suggest, since Susan's not here, that she would bring back where that money would come from at the mid-year budget review.
All right. Somebody want to try a motion?
I'll do it.
Okay.
I would move that we direct staff to commit an additional $10,000 to the county VCB and to free up the initial $10,000 that we had allocated, and further to direct staff to come back with a recommendation from where to get the money.
Second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say so. Say no.
No.
Thank you. Okay, 4-1 with Rick opposed. All right. Okay, moving on to the next issue, which is very similar, and that is reconsideration of the city's involvement in the Business Improvement District. And Andrea?
Once again, good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council.
This evening, the staff report before you is reconsideration of the city's involvement in the countywide business improvement district. For purposes of history, in July of 2006, the County Board of Supervisors adopted a resolution taking the first step towards setting up a countywide business improvement district, basically as a mechanism to raise money from the hospitality industry for promotion and marketing of this area. After approval at the county level, the focus shifted to local city councils, and the Visitors and Conference Bureau requested the City of Morro Bay City Council adopt a resolution giving consent to include the City of Morro Bay within the countywide business improvement district boundaries. On November 13th of 2006, the City of Morro Bay City Council passed a resolution which conditionally granted consent to the county to form the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Business Improvement District. The resolution passed by the City of Morro Bay contains several conditions which are as follows. There would be no levy of assessment on mobile home or recreation vehicle parks. Use of assessment proceeds for promotion of the city will not be dependent upon the level of the City of Morro Bay financial contribution to the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau. The cities and county will be reimbursed for indirect costs as determined by their respective finance officers. Vacation rentals will be included in the assessment. The revenue formula has a ceiling of 1% of room rental, and a sunset clause would be included. When the countywide concept was presented, it was proposed for the County of San Luis Obispo unincorporated areas, as well as the cities of Atascadero, Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles, and Pismo Beach. Currently, the only organizations that have passed a resolution consenting to the countywide formation are the County of San Luis Obispo unincorporated areas, Atascadero, and the City of Morro Bay. While there still is technically time for cities to add, the resolution of intention to form the Business Improvement District is scheduled for the July 29th, 2008 Board of Supervisors meeting. This item has been brought back before the City Council as a result of concern regarding the lack of cities participating and the countywide concept being diminished to only two cities in the county. Should the City Council decide against inclusion in the countywide BID, or Business Improvement District, the resolution passed in November would need to be rescinded. There's also been some discussion of a local Business Improvement District within the limits of Morro Bay, with those funds being retained for specific promotional use within the city. A local BID would involve similar research that was conducted for the countywide concept, including assessing the opinions and attitudes of the hospitality industry within Morro Bay. I will note one correction in the staff report. The countywide business improvement assessment is 1%, not 2%, as mentioned in the staff report. With that, that concludes my staff report. And, again, I'm happy to answer questions you might have.
Any questions for Andrea?
I think this gets, for me, does this take the place of our contribution to the VCB if this starts? No. And this is in addition to? Okay.
It's a separate item that would be strictly for the people who are part of it.
40%, 50% responded to the poll, and less than that, less than half of those supported this idea?
It was a poll done, I believe, through the city attorney's office. It was done prior to August of 2006 is when it went out, and basically the total number of businesses surveyed were 54, and the number of businesses responding to the survey were 22. I could put this up on the overhead. It might be helpful. But the first question was, does the ownership of your business support the idea of the city consenting to a countywide BID formed by the Board of Supervisors? And basically you had number of businesses responding yes was 10, no was 12, not responding 32. And you had a second question, do you support a citywide BID formed instead to retain control of the money raised? Yes were 3, no were 19, number of not responding were 32. And then just real quickly, there was a second page about weighting the results based on number of rooms involved. So if you understand what that is, obviously a hotel with 6 rooms carries less weight than a hotel with 25. And for the question, the first question, which was the countywide BID, that changed the response of yes to 29% and the response of no to 22%, and the percentage not responding were 47. And for the second question, city forming a citywide BID, businesses responding yes were 11, no were 40, 11%, I'm sorry, no were 40%, and not responding were 47%. And that was given out in a memo from the former city manager.
So from the people that would participate in this, there wasn't a whole lot of support from them. Doesn't seem. Correct?
I'm sorry, repeat your question.
I said there doesn't sit for the people. These are done by the people that would have participated in this, and there wasn't any support from them.
Yes, it appears that the people that would be involved in it were the people that were polled. You're correct.
Okay, well, I'll add something to that. What happened was this was brought forward by some of the hotel owners and their association, and they had done their own survey and said that there was support. We felt that it was only fair that we make sure that everyone in the city got notified. So the city sent out that letter to all hotel and motel owners. I think the lack of response did not, I think it indicated a we don't object rather than a support or not. Because if they objected, I'm sure they would have responded and been here. And as the one who brought this up, what I'm looking for here basically is doing that again and making sure that everybody knows the change, what's happened, how many people are on this and how many aren't, and that sort of thing.
What change are you referring to?
I'm sorry?
What change are you referring to?
Well, the fact that it hasn't been approved by a lot of the other cities. There's only ourselves at Atascadero in the county right now, and they want to start work on this on January 29th of 2008. So I think it's only fair that the people who are in our city need to be aware, and I don't know if this will change their mind or not, but they ought to know that it's a very limited number.
And does this, maybe Ed could answer this, this acts like a little TOT boost.
Right.
You'll add this on to a room rate, and then it right. goes to the VCB. Is that how it would work?
It is that,
Mr.
yes.
Biagini?
It's a BID thing. We'll have her come and speak. I don't know. Johnny, are you going to talk to the BID thing as well? Okay. All right. Shall we go to that?
Yeah, because I have
all right.
a question.
Johnny.
Good evening again. I'm Johnny Biagini, Executive Director of the San Luis County Visitors and Conference Bureau, and I want to thank you for the previous vote. That will help tremendously with our efforts. Regarding the Business Improvement District, there is a steering committee made up of at least 10 hoteliers countywide, of which the co-chair is John Solo from Morro Bay here. And this steering committee has spent an awful lot of time trying to put this, establish this countywide BID together. In fact, we're going into 3 years now. That's not unusual. Many of the BIDs have taken 4 years. Monterey County's has taken 15. We hope ours doesn't take that long. And when we started the BID program, it was to assess the businesses, for the businesses, the lodging industry, to agree to assess themselves 1% of the room rate, which by law is really an assessment on the business owner. The business owner can decide to pass that on to the visitor in the form of on the folio, the checkout folio. Mm-hmm. So yes, it would be an additional line item. It is not a tax. It is an assessment. This assessment would then be collected by the city and then passed on Bispo going to do and what is Pismo Beach going to do. That has been the story for a long time now. And in an effort to move that along, the hoteliers this spring in their discussions with city councils and city staff said, what if we establish a 2% revenue share BID, where 1% still goes into the county coffers or into the county BID effort, promoting the county, and then 1% in that jurisdiction goes back to the local tourism promotion program. A win-win situation. That was done primarily for the larger cities who were discussing that, which would be Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and Pismo Beach. To this date, we have jumped through a lot of hoops for all of the cities, revising ordinances, of which I think we're at maybe 13 now, and those cities have yet to make a decision. The steering committee has decided, and because market conditions are forcing a faster decision, to move forward with the BID as with the three that have currently provided consent at the 1% level, in the hopes that between now and January 29,
other cities will come on board. If they do, they'll be included in that resolution of intention. And to move forward and have success under our belt in that first year with a $1.3 million budget to promote the county and those businesses that are in the district, they will be receiving the benefit.
So that money would go specifically to those communities who've signed on.
That's exactly right.
Well, could I just ask, maybe Andrea, you wrote this, so it's the same percent and the same consideration, she says, are still in place, protecting mobile home parks and such. Why is this before us tonight? I'm losing my sense of it.
It's the lack of participation. By other communities.
She just told us, though, I'm going to get more money than San Luis Obispo.
It's a future agenda item that was placed on by the mayor. That's how it came about to begin with a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, your initial resolution states that it would be 1%.
Mm-hmm. And it's there was some confusion in the interim about one or two.
The last ordinance I reviewed was at 2%, 1% going to the city, and 1% going to the BID. So I have not seen any new ordinance or confirmed any of the resolution that you passed before. So it's back to you as a status to make sure you do not want to rescind or whether you want to continue to support the BID before it goes to this county at the end of January.
And I would say, Ms. Biagini, that I would be very careful that if you're telling us it's 1% and you're going before the board on January 29th, that percentage doesn't change because we'll just pull it back on a January meeting.
Exactly. We would not go forward with a higher percentage for Morro Bay than what has already been consented to. Period. End of story. The ordinance that is currently the latest draft is still a draft and can be changed prior to the resolution of intention. What is also...
What does the current draft say as a percentage?
The current draft says 2%, but that was based on all of these cities coming on board at 2%. We would still have to come back to you to see if, and the hoteliers in particular here in Morro Bay, mm-hmm. if they wanted to go to 2%. We can have a BID with different percentages charged to different cities
right.
based on what they have consented.
Okay, and I would agree that if there's some 2% in the play, it has to come back here.
Absolutely.
We have to resurvey people.
Yep.
Betty, do you have a question for
us? Yes, thank you. In which you were just saying a minute before that, and about my confusion about our contribution for the city to the VCB versus the BID, all the money still goes to the VCB. Or are you separating the money into two camps?
If you want to look at it that way, yes. It is all going towards tourism promotion, and the county VCB is the contractor for it.
So it gets both pots of money, the city money
right.
and the hotelier money.
Right.
Okay. And the money that comes from the hoteliers does not promote the city. It promotes their businesses.
It promotes, the benefit goes to the hotels that are in the BID.
Right.
Promoting their destination, their location, is how we're going to get benefit to those hotels.
Mr. Schultz?
How will it work? For example, it's just a hypothetical. San Luis Obispo is currently a member of the VCP and paying its fair share.
This lies in the district established by the BID boundaries.
So it's almost one or the other. It's a BID instead of a VCB. Yes?
And that, I guess that goes back to my question. If we give them BID money, why do they need money from the council?
The BID money has never been requested as a replacement. In fact, it says that in the ordinance mm-hmm. for public sector funding. This is still a partnership. We get membership dues right now from private sector. You could consider BID funds as private sector dues. It's just a whole lot more of it.
a question, Madam Mayor. Mm-hmm. Johnny, does that mean then that essentially you might be running two flights of ads? One would be BID members, one would be VCB General?
Well,
I mean, how
that's what we're trying to avoid. That's what we're trying to avoid, is
Understood.
That we want one marketing push, one marketing voice with enough resources to make an impact. And that's why the district will be determining the membership of the Visitors and Conference Bureau so that we don't have multiple marketing campaigns, one at, you know, $5,000 here when the rest of it's at $3 million.
Okay,
it
so in other words, basically what you're telling the cities, they're either in or they're out of the VCB then, for all intents and purposes, as far as the marketing or promotion end of it?
Well, if the city does not consent to being part of the BID as of July, and we are successful in establishing a BID, that's a big if.
Let's consider that a given
our
conversation.
Okay, that's positive thinking. And let's say a city does not consent to being part of the BID by January 29. They have a couple of options. If their hotels want them to be part of the county BID, they can then establish a city BID where in the ordinance it contributes money to the county BID effort. There, that city then becomes part of the county district and all of the benefits of marketing. If a city decides not to be part of the county BID, come July 1, that city and all of those businesses in that city are not part of the Visitors and Conference Bureau marketing efforts. If a city like Morro Bay decides and continues to consent to being a part of the BID, your public sector funding does not determine the whether that city is marketed or not. So if you decide we're not funding you,
it's getting thick.
It's getting thick.
All right, this is a public hearing. So if we have any other questions of Johnny, fine. Otherwise, let's let her sit down, see if anybody else has anything to add, and then we'll bring her back. Okay. All right, public hearing time.
Good evening, Ed Biagini. We own the Embarcadero Inn in Morro Bay, and I do want to address this one.
Good.
First of all, I think the council, and I think most all of you do, needs to understand that the difference between a BID and TOT is the fact that we are collecting TOT for your general fund, for which you provide the services that you do to the community. The BID is the businesses are assessing themselves, and that money has been determined that because of the nature of the assessment that those hoteliers that would be involved want to see it go to promote tourism. And so I guess that we could decide that we wanted to promote do anything, but that's the nature of this particular BID. So it is not public money. It's our money that we've assessed ourselves and think that this is a good way to go with that. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, yes, we indeed, that's what allowed you folks to grant and pass the resolution a year ago to allow us to vote to be a part of this process, was the fact that we brought to you signed signatures from over 66% of the hotel rooms in Morro Bay. So, and I did that because I thought that, and you have those signatures. They're on file with you somewhere from last year. And the reason that I did that was because I was very disappointed with the results of Bob's survey that he had done. I thought that there was a lot of problem in communicating with the owners, finding the people to talk to get the vote. That's why you didn't have that good of a response, where we were able to get a hold of everybody that we possibly wanted to. And we'll do that again if you so decide that's on BID, because we could never generate the revenue to do anything with. So that's my 2 cents. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm back.
Joan Solu. I own Days Inn, Beach and Main Street. My husband, John, is out of town on family business. But we both support a county BID at the 1%. We especially actually support it with the reduced amount of cities that would be going in on it. And let me explain to you why. Because if Morro Bay puts in our 1%, it's about estimated to be about $170,000 annually from the Morro Bay Hoteliers. Morro Bay Hoteliers then would see a direct impact on the advertising and the marketing and the push power for us, which, as you well know, occupy those 900 beds, and it's a trickle-down effect to our restaurants, our shops, the galley, the new galley, the, you know, Roses, the barbecue places, Poppy, Solimia, all those places. Now, at this point, that 170 would go into a pool of about $1.3 million. That is with the county unincorporated areas, San Simeon, Cayucas, those places being the largest contributors. But those are all tiny little satellites. So those kind of get marketed separately and fully under the umbrella of the county, but we get marketed as our own city. In addition, I still support it if, say, Pismo Beach or Paso Robles or all those cities come back on board at some point, and that's because that would increase the marketing power to over $2 million of marketing power. And like Ed said, if we go at a BID as just a city, we'll never get $1.3 million to $2 million worth of marketing power behind us as a single city. That's why we support, as a family and as a business, a BID for the county, and we really hope that you support it too. And if we're resurveyed, we're going to say exactly what I just said here. And so you can resurvey us if you want, or you can take me at my word. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. All right, I'm going to start just because, again, I think that all I'm looking for is to make sure that our hotel and motel owners know what the status is now. I don't expect that they're going to want us to rescind the resolution, but I want to make sure that they understand. And I think that can be accomplished by just a letter going out to each of them saying, you know, this is the resolution that was passed on such and such a date. So far, Atascadero, the county, and Morro Bay are the only people signed on, but that still offers whatever that quote was in promotional funding. And if you have any objection to that, please let us know before our next meeting date. We'd have to set a date by the time they'd have to let us know. So that's what I would propose if the council would like to consider that. So who wants to start? Betty?
Go ahead.
Rick? Yeah.
We have to keep in mind that on the next meeting we're going to be also considering a 2% increase on TOT. So, you know, this is just another percentage point. Really doesn't matter that much to me because it's on you guys. It's not on the city. The only thing that's on the city is staff time collecting the information and sending it on. I do have to say, though, and I want to go on record as saying, and I know this is water under the bridge, but I think it's irresponsible for us to be throwing $20,000 out without the advice of our CFO here. I think that was a bad move. But this isn't going to cost us anything, so don't feel real strongly about it. If the participants say they want to participate, then that's fine with me, but I think it's a good idea to poll them.
Okay. Melody?
Well, I think it was when I heard that the draft copy as of today has 2% in it, and I started to wonder. And then when Ms. Winholtz and Mr. Pierce started asking questions and were getting that answer, I got very confused. I am more interested in looking at a TOT that stays inside the city and that we use in our promotions committee and our own visitor center. Our promotions committee just asked us for a bunch of money with the mid-year budget, and we gave it to them. And I basically have, I'm failing to understand how this works, the mechanisms, who's in the VCB, who's in the BID. I've just lost track of it. And so if anyone...
information's out there and or it clarifies whatever may not have been clear before. I did notice on the packet that was passed around that, you know, there's one person that owns 6 or 7 hotels. There's another one that owns 2 or 3 hotels. And I know that it was stated that it's by room per hotel, but yet there's rooms per hotel that's owned by many people. So it's like, is it really just a few people making a decision for the majority, or is each hotel owner per, it's kind of like, you know, do we work through the Congress or do we work through the Senate? You know, how is the representation done? And I guess I need that clarified.
Okay, well then I would make the motion that we ask the city attorney to send out a letter to each of the hotels and motels explaining the current situation and asking them if they have any desire for us to rescind that resolution, to express that to us before January 5th. How's that?
I certainly appreciate and will help, but I think the letter should come from the city manager.
Okay. City manager, then. I know it went through your office last time. Margie's the one that sent him out.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Rob.
No, not. The letter has always come from the city manager,
okay.
And Margie certainly can help if you want us to do any survey follow-up work with that. She just did the survey.
Well, this is less a survey. This is just a letter of notification, really. I'm not looking for a survey.
Okay.
All right. Changing it to the city manager. That's my motion.
Second.
Discussion. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1, Melody opposed. Okay. Would we like to take a short break before we continue? Okay. I guess we're taking a break. Okay, we're back. Yes, I know. Okay, Betty, I'm sorry, we're on. Okay. We're going to go back to consent agenda, and because we have some people waiting on that discussion, I think. So, does anyone want to pull anything on consent?
Did you say that?
I said 2 and 3.
Bill says 2 and 3.
And 5.
And Melody says 5. Anything else? Okay, can I hear a motion approving a 1, a 4, a 6, and a 7?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion went to Bill. Second went to Betty. All right, Bill, A2.
Well, I think there's enough interest on the parts of the audience that I just thought we ought to talk about it. I have, let me see which one is which.
I know.
All right. I think one of the things was we had some comment tonight on, let's see. Anybody else want to talk about it while I'm looking?
Madam Mayor, would,
yes.
Is this?
Yes.
Would you like me just real quickly to read the subject for the folks out there?
I think that'd be a good idea.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Approval of lease. The subject of this item is lease amendment number 1, the lease agreement for lease site 34W, located adjacent to 225 Main Street. The tenant is Norm Arnold. Lease Site 34W is a water lease site located south of Tidelands Park between the large wooden cannery dock, Lease Site 35W, 36W, now abandoned, and Bayfront Marina, the old fuel dock, which is Lease Site 30W, 33W, which, by the way, is the subject of the next agenda item, 30W, 33W. Currently, Lease Site 34W, the subject of this agenda item, contains a four-slip berthing system, which is in good condition, and the tenant has committed to completing additional repairs and improvements within the next 2 years of the proposed 11-year lease extension. Staff recommends City Council adoption of this resolution to approve Amendment Number 1 to the lease agreement for Lease Site 34W.
For breach of the lease and subject to any and all remedies allowed. I would add that section.
She's adding one.
On item A3, there's a paragraph regarding material breach, adding that to this amendment as well, so they're consistent in that respect. That addresses one of the concerns of the public regarding the parking and that lot that is in dispute and allows the parking to be anywhere. It doesn't address the need that the public expressed, though, regarding the public hearing. Maybe you were going to address that.
No, actually, what I was going to do is ask the city attorney to explain to those people who commented tonight that this is something that we can't make that those five spaces at 206 Main Street go away. That's a legal issue. And if Rob, if you would weigh in on that, just so they know.
Well, I'll try to make it a little bit simpler than that, and I appreciate the suggestion by...
Your mic's not working.
Yeah, the heater's too loud.
Yeah, I think the heater's loud.
I appreciate the change in the condition that Councilmember Winholtz, because it really doesn't limit it to 206. It'll just be anywhere, and that's really the requirement we should be looking at, is that they're required to provide five off-site, because you can't provide it on-site, off-site parking spaces. Currently, that would be the 206 Main. They still do have the deed restriction. We all know there's a dispute between the two, whether that's still legally obligated and whether who can actually remove that deed restriction is something I don't believe we should get involved with. But more importantly is the requirement that they do provide the five parking spaces. So I'm fine with the deletion of that language. It just says it'll have to be required at all times, and that's almost like there always will have to be an off-site parking agreement for this lease site.
So even if the property owner at 206 seeks a legal remedy, we still have the requirement to have five parking spaces. They just may not be there if she's successful in court.
Exactly. If she was successful in removing that deed restriction, then we would go to the leaseholder and say, you need to provide us five parking spaces somewhere else, either like we were talking about on the previous one, by finding someone who would be willing to rent space or from any other place that would be possible.
Madam Mayor, may I ask the attorney a question?
Sure.
This requirement about July 1st, 2010, deals with the four items listed under Section 13.03, Mr. Schultz, but the two items on the back page, 04 and 05, and I'm particularly concerned about 05, the restroom availability, there's no date set with that. Would that just begin as soon as the document is signed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, that would be my understanding, and we could even clear that up.
Okay, thanks.
All right, any other comments on this one?
Yeah, I have a couple comments. Jean Dowdy provided us with information, some questions that I think are good questions. The first one was, and I'll direct these to you, Rick. I don't know if you got a copy of this from Mr. Dowdy, but he's concerned that all the surface waters from 207 225 Main drain into the bay at this water lease site. And he's suggesting that there should be an oil silt separator installed. And as a member of the NEP exec board, I would suggest that that's a good idea down there to put an oil silt separator. Is that possible to add that to this? That's some of the improvements we're suggesting.
Both of the issues brought up by Mr. Dowdy, I think, are discussions of issues that are part of the development on the upland property and not a part of the lease site. I assume when the development plan was submitted and considered and approved by the city, a drainage plan was considered. If drainage was indeed from the site, that it's channelized to a location So without information, I don't think this is a proper place to address improvements or complaints about code enforcement or development issues on the upland property.
Well, begging your pardon, but I think that the storm drains down near on the lee side, I would think. Is it upland from that?
I can't tell you without reviewing it, but I don't believe there is a storm drain on this at this lee site location.
Okay. Did they get a permit for the hot tub, Bruce?
I need to look into it for the upland properties.
Mm-hmm.
I need to look into it. I did mention it to our city engineer, and he's going to look into it tomorrow, so we'd be happy to follow up with an email once we get a chance to look at the development plans, but it really...
It's not development plans. It's built. It's been built. We've seen it.
Then it's a potential code enforcement issue.
My recollection of the spa was part of the plans, but we can check to make sure it was on there. And I would mention that any spa that...
Probably the city attorney. So say that they get that deed restriction removed because they do go with, I think, a very good argument about there's been things redeveloped down on the lease site. Then what's our remedy at that point? Because parking down there is just ugly anyway. Are we going to then tell the people who are in the boat slips to go away, or what would be our remedy?
We would notify notify the property owner that they're in default in the lease because they no longer have 5 parking spaces, and to begin working on other solutions, finding other areas that could accommodate. You heard, I think, Mr. Martini mentioned that he might be able to provide that, or I think the owner might have other property down there, or there might be, you know, abandonment of other right-of-ways in that area. I mean, there's other solutions that we'd have to deal with at that time to see if there was the ability to provide it. If there was no solutions, you know, then it would come to you as whether he's in breach and to terminate the lease or to accommodate it some other way.
Okay. All right, Betty, you want to make a motion with your suggestions then?
I thought I did.
Yeah.
I don't make a motion?
No.
Oh. Then I would move approval of lease amendment number 1 to the lease agreement for lease site 34W, located adjacent to 225 Main Street, with the following 2 changes. One being that item number 4 stop after the word tenants and the rest of the words in the sentence be deleted, and that paragraph number 2 from item A3 be incorporated into amendment number 1 and item A2.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second it. I'm wondering if it's clear enough for staff.
Richard?
Okay, everybody's nodding.
All right. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, 4-1. Melody opposed. All right, and then Bill, you pulled A3.
I pulled it for largely the same reason, just so the public could hear something about it. I would request that Mr. Algert give us a brief rundown,
okay,
so that the public knows what we're talking about.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Mr. Councilman. Approval of this subject of this item is a second amendment to the lease agreement for lease site 33W, located at 201 Main Street. The tenants or lessees are Jay and Marlene Coakley. Lease site 3030W is a water lease site located south of Tidelands Park, also just south of lease site 34W, the one of our previous discussion. Currently, lease site 33W contains 24 boat slips, and the slip system is in good to fair condition. The tenant is committed to completing plans for additional repairs and improvements within the next year of the proposed 6-year lease extension. There's a series of proposals in this amendment. There are a series of issues in the amendment that will go over the 6 years. The first step in the first year is to submit plans for a new electrical system on the docks. After 2 years, some work would have to be done in the building permit pulled, and then the complete installation of the electrical system within 6-year extension. Staff recommends that the City Council adopt resolution of 6207 to approve the second amendment to the lease agreement for this lease site.
Okay, Betty?
Yes, I would like to amend this one as well.
And I'm on the page that says Second Amendment. And under item 2A, the second line, it says, and I'll read just that line, grade electrical system including sufficient pedestals and service for, and here I would add the words, 24 slips. I'd like that number in there. It's my understanding of how many is currently there. I'd like to make sure that we don't lose any.
I'm sorry, I'm not finding where you are.
Okay. Second Amendment is the top of the page.
Okay.
Last page down to
number 2A. The second line of number of letter A.
Oh, okay. Okay, for 24 slips.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then if I might, I'd like to ask Mr. Coakley a question.
Okay.
Since he's in the
audience.
Is
that all right with the council?
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Coakley.
Thank you for being here this evening. My only concern about this is that it takes 6 years to do this upgrade with the electrical. Is there a reason or a way that it could be done in half that time?
You know, of course, because first of all, I already have all the material. I guess the reason why they did the 6 years is because I already had the material, but he wants to see the receipt for $10,000. So I didn't do the negotiation on that.
Mm-hmm.
I got meters, which is going to go in right away because I want to start charging people for electricity. Some people are abusing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that way I can find out.
So he'll get his plans that first year, the second year, he'll expend his $10,000 or as much as he wants at that point. I mean, it sounds like he's willing to do it as quickly as he needs to.
And then at that point he comes back and he asks for a longer-term lease and we see the...
I don't know what happens after that, Mr.
Okay.
Albert. Do you know where he is in his process?
The process, as I would understand, is that we will make a change to this lease agreement, this proposed amendment, to add that, well, if this, what you're suggesting, is approved by the City Council, mm-hmm. then we will change the term, the period that he is required to make the electrical improvements from 6 years to 3 years. The lease amendment will still be a six-year term. It will still be a six-year amendment. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be bring it back to the council for sooner consideration or issues like that. I think it's just expediting mm-hmm. the period for the improvements to be done.
And surely that was my intent, not to cut his lease short, but to give him that full 6 years. Sorry for the confusion.
Okay. You want to make a motion?
Yes, I would... move that we approve the second amendment to the lease agreement for lease site 30W-33W located adjacent to 201 Main Street with two changes. One would be under section 2A that the number 24 be added before the word slips and that in 2C the year be changed from 2013 to 2011.
Second.
Any other comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
Madam Mayor, may I just offer a comment for the council? Is that our normal process in these is that we get an amendment and executed by the tenant so that once the council approves it, we know it's an agreement. This is going to have to, of course, be some slight changes mm-hmm. made to both of these, resubmitted to the tenant. We will advise you if there's any problem. I can't tell you. We heard from Mr. Coakley on one issue, but there is another issue he hasn't agreed to publicly yet. I can tell you, I can't speak for them at this point, but I can tell you I can argue with a straight face of both of them that these are not material changes or substantial changes, and I would hope they would execute them. But there is that possibility, and I will advise you so if there is any trouble with them signing these.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. So that, let's see, A5, Melody.
Yeah, on A5, this is... talking about the Cloisters property and the subdividing it and using the money to pay for the fire station, so I know it's a sensitive issue. But I just wanted to ask if this is normal behavior when you... This project was conditioned, and I didn't live here when Cloisters was going through all that, but I know that people still remember the battle. And they want to remove a condition in here that says... In the event that this site is not accepted as a location for a city fire station, a statement shall be recorded with a final tract map identifying that unless the general plan, local coastal plan, and a development agreement is amended, lot 124 shall have no residential density. And we're suggesting, of course, residential density. So now the staff is asking us to amend the conditions of approval to remove that. I'm just wondering, is this the way that we do these things, and we just do it by motion and get rid of it? Is that okay with you, Mr. Ambo? Or?
Madam Mayor and Council, yeah, what they're suggesting, they've dug out a condition that was approved with the conditional use permit for the precise plan, which was even before the project was mapped and recorded and built out. So they found a condition that was passed along with all the other conditions of approval. And when they did their analysis, they found this kind of unusual condition. And when we looked through our records, really we couldn't find anything that substantiated the need for this. But we did verify that it does exist on the precise plan approval for the project back 10 so.
Maybe a little bit of history might help you a little bit. It is a very convoluted record, and unfortunately or fortunately, I've been wrapped up in it with the assessment district and the legal challenges that occurred on that. But the Cloisters was only lot 1 through 120, and through the concept plan, through the CDP, through the appeals, only talked about lot 1 through 120. It had a reference in the CDP that said that this lot would be used as a fire station, or the applicant would provide fire mitigation funds. So that's all that really occurred. And then after, when the precise plan is done and the development agreement and those things were all done, that's where it came in to use it, this specific lot 124, as a fire station. But we never changed the density to government. We just left it residential, and that's why we felt there was no reason to go, but it had a condition in it that applied to lot 124. So it's kind of convoluted. Hope I kind of explained it, that we can remove a condition on this project since we're the owner of it and we created the condition. We can eliminate it. If we don't eliminate it, I don't believe it makes any difference, but the Coastal Commission required it now after the fact, and if it means we didn't have an appeal, I'm happy to go along with it.
I'd like to ask one question.
Okay.
And that goes back to what you're just saying. I went back and I found the EIR for the Cloisters, and it was not a controversial item at the time. Kind of a matter-of-fact thing. But I did get the sense that it wasn't just city-approved, that it was Coastal Commission-approved, so I'm wondering why we don't have to get their permission to remove it. And it doesn't seem like it would be controversial, and that they would just...
Right, and what we will do is we will... It wasn't part of their CDP. Mm-hmm. It wasn't part of any of their conditions they attached, but they do have a condition in their CDP that not only is it all of these conditions, but it's any other ones the city attaches to it. So we will, after you do this, we will send it off to them saying, okay, please do your amendment so it coincides with ours, and okay, we'll be done with
Thank
it.
Thank you. I didn't get that procedure down.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. I would move approval of A5.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right, moving on to unfinished business, item C1, authorization. Wait a minute.
I think I would defer to Chief Pond.
I think we only have Chief Pond here for item D2. Is that correct? Let's go to D2.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. Today we're going to be talking about a sole source purchase of a fire engine. Staff's requesting Council authorize the sole source purchase of a Pierce-manufactured 1500 GPM Type 1 fire engine in an amount not to exceed $445,000. This engine would be to replace a 24-year-old engine that's currently in our aging fleet. According to our municipal code, the bid process can be bypassed when the commodity can be obtained from only one vendor. Staff believes that while there are many fire engine manufacturers, Pierce engines are unique and only available from one vendor. Pierce builds their own cabs, their own chassis, their own body, and the pump. They don't purchase a Ford truck and then put something on it to make a fire engine. These are custom engines built to be engines, engineered to be engines, and we have been quite pleased with those in the past. They're the only company producing a rear engine PTO and a Type 1 fire engine instead of a transfer case, and this allows for a shorter chassis while providing more storage space. And think of a fire engine as a toolbox, and space is very valuable for us. Why do we like Pierce so much? The city's fleet currently is 100% Pierce. The city-owned fire engines are all Pierce. We have two 1983 Pierce fire engines, and we have a 1995. This sole sourcing, it gives us continuity of the features on the engines, and our mechanics enjoy that, and our operators enjoy that as well. Our experience with Pierce has been very positive over the years. Essentially, you get what you pay for. It is a good engine, and comparable to other engines, we've enjoyed it far and away above any engine that we've purchased in the past. We have purchased other cheaper manufactured engines, and we've had pretty bad experiences with those. We had a Grumman that we purchased in 1980. Essentially, it was a garbage truck cabin chassis that was built into a fire engine, and that's a common practice to use other types of chassis and things to build fire apparatus. It didn't function well. It rusted out in 10 years, and we had to move it to second out status and not use it quite so much. So when you're buying Pierce, you're buying something that's going to be around for at least 20 to 25 years, and that's what our experience has been with our equipment. The Pierce products, they've been building those since 1913. It's a well-established company. We're pretty sure that it'll be around in 20 to 25 years to continue to service our parts and service needs. Other departments in our county have been using Pierce. Actually, Cambria Fire purchased one this year. Slow City uses Pierce, or Randy Los Osos, Atascadero, Diablo Canyon. LA City is a common user of Pierce, as is San Bernardino. San Bernardino sole sources Pierce for all their engines. I think it's important that we realize the size of a company and their length of service. Some of the manufacturers that have been used in this county in the past no longer exist. Howe, we used to have a Howe fire engine, they no longer exist. The Grumman, obviously, they don't make fire engines anymore. San Luis City always used Mack engines through much of the life of the Slayton. So that gives us a total potential balance of 451,972. If the purchase price of the engine is $445,000, and we believe we're going to come under that number, and we prepay for the engine, we will receive a rebate of $15,000. So we're looking at a cost that'll be $430,000 or less. And comparing that to what LA City paid at $407,000. And they got a multi-engine discount, buying 13 of them at a time. And Cambria paying $465,000 for theirs. I think we're falling there in the ballpark of what's reasonable for an engine like this that's going to last for the length of time that we're talking. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to council for questions.
Okay, questions? Bill?
How did we get so lucky to get the discount? I mean, not that I'm knocking it, but...
It's a pretty standard thing. If you prepay the engine through Pierce, they will give you a rebate. And if we were to purchase two apparatus from them, we'd also receive a multi-engine discount. Atascadero received a multi-engine discount of nearly $40,000 an engine by buying more than one at a time.
Yeah, they bought two of them.
They bought two at a time.
And they've got a ladder truck on order.
They paid cash for both the engines and...
And we told them that one of our council members' names was Pierce, and that did it.
They spell it differently.
It's spelled differently.
But Atascadero did purchase theirs with cash through development impact fees. Yeah.
Rick?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Mike. When you retire, you could probably be a salesman for this because you sold me. What happens with our old engine? Do we realize any benefit when we get rid of that?
We should receive some benefit when we sell. We haven't researched the value of that engine yet. It does have value. There are companies that will take those and sell those for us. We've utilized a company in the past to sell our used fire apparatus. There's not always a huge market for old fire apparatus, but I'm sure that And I'd hate to estimate the value right now, but yes, we will see something coming back from the sale of that engine.
So the fire department commissions a company to salvage.
That's one way. That's one way. We'll investigate what would be the best option for us.
Okay. On page 3, the last paragraph, it says Pierce also offers its customers, and then it's blank. Were you intending to add anything to that?
Well, for some reason, page 4 didn't get copied.
Can you tell me what other benefit?
There's a number of benefits.
Okay.
What it was going to continue on to say was to talk about the ability to have them repair and replace parts and access to mechanics. It talked about warranties, I believe. The warranty on the chassis is lifetime. The warranty on the tank is lifetime. The warranty on many of the components are lifetime. When you go to looking at things like the pump that are very active, the warranty drops to 6 years and 10 years on some other parts. But it does have a very good warranty compared to the industry.
Other questions?
Chief Pond, I would just congratulate you on telling us where the money is to pay for it, for paying cash, and for making a wise use of Measure Q money.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Janet? You talked about other cities doing this sole sourcing. If we do this tonight, this is only for this particular project, or is there a way to sole source into the future?
Well, the way I wrote it was just this one time to sole source, but, council can direct, what they would like that way. Personally, I like Pierce. I like keeping the fleet with one manufacturer. It makes it very streamlined and simple. You can go online and click on the Pierce and look up your exact plans for your engine and pick a part and then order that part if you need to replace it. So it is nice to be able to do that. But right now, I'm just asking for this one engine.
And just excuse me, Mr. Pierce. The money is coming from Measure Q. I don't think all the Measure Q money has been collected yet. So do you know, because Ms. Layton's not here, will she be using our line of credit to pay for this, or does she have the cash? Or
that's a good question. She does have the cash. In communicating with her, she has money that she can front until the rest of that Measure Q money comes in.
Okay.
So that we can get that rebate by prepaying it. If we prepay within 60 days, we're still good on that. There is money in an equipment replacement account that she has that the balance could be pulled from.
Okay. Thank you.
Question?
Yes.
I'm assuming that you're going to get rid of the 5381.
Correct. The lime green engine, yes.
Now, it's a shorter wheelbase than the type ones. Is that going to be okay? Are we at some point going to find ourselves in a little bit of difficulty by not having the shorter wheelbase somewhere?
We love short wheelbases, and this new engine with the configuration we're looking at, we're going to buy it as short as we can, but being a Type 1 fire apparatus with the components we're looking at and the carrying capacity, it won't match 5381. Frankly, there's hardly any engines out there that'll match 5381. Even Cal Fire short little Wildland engines can't compete with 5381. The engine that we are purchasing to make up for that difference in wheel base has a turning radius an angle that the front wheels can turn that is much more extreme than 5391 or 81. And so
we've got two things that we have to do tonight. You want to just do D3 quickly? Authorization for funding to defend lawsuit entitled Linker and Patterson versus City of Morro Bay.
Yes, good evening. Although there isn't any real urgency, though, but
there's not.
No, I'm handling the answer for it right now. A little bit of background: Linker versus the City of Morro Bay was a recently filed lawsuit against the city. It has to do with the subdivision that was denied by the City Council at 735 Cabrillo Place. We turned it over to our CJA PIA. They denied coverage based on exclusions in there that don't protect the city from
actions that the council takes on land use decisions, you know, our insurance deals primarily with negligence, trip and falls, other accidents that occur within the city and not direct actions taken by the city council on land use issues. So I'm going to try to handle almost all the entire litigation myself. It's issues I'm familiar with. It's here in San Luis Obispo. I'm only asking for $7,500 to cover it. What that would cover is I'll do all the appearances, but there will be, when I get done with my written briefs, to have outside counsel look at it over to make sure that everything is in there that I need, kind of a second set of eyes. So that's why it's in front of you.
Any questions?
Question.
Yeah. Rick?
If you prevail in this endeavor, any chance of recouping those fees?
No. Unfortunately, if they prevail, they get legal fees, and the public entity doesn't if they prevail. Yeah. Just that's the way the government code is written.
Okay. Any questions? Motion?
Motion.
I make a motion that we authorize $7,500 out of risk management fund to fund the defense of Linker and Patterson versus City of Morro Bay.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, then moving back up to C1, authorization for staff to negotiate and enter an agreement for an organizational analysis of the city structure.
Rob. Yes, good evening again, and this is back in front of you after your direction at the November 13th meeting, which when you reviewed four of the proposals, you narrowed those down to two of the proposals we received, one from Springstead and the other one from Managing Partners. During the interim time, I know that all of you were interviewed the two firms that were left. I wasn't part of those, but you did it either individually or in twos, so there wasn't any Brown Act issues. And now you're back to discuss those two firms that are left and hopefully pick one that we can then negotiate a contract with and start the management audit.
Okay. Any questions first? Get right into our discussion. Okay, who wants to start?
I'll start.
Oh, first of all, I asked Andrea if she would call a couple of cities that had been serviced by both of these applicants today, and she did that. So, Andrea, could you give us that report, please?
Yes, good evening once again. I did contact the City of Cambria. They worked with Management Partners. It was a study to look at incorporation of the city. They were very pleased with Management Partners. They did a good job for them. They didn't work a lot with the employees because of the subject of the study, but they worked with citizens groups in Cambria, a number of citizens groups, and they went well. They stuck to their timeline, and they were pleased with their performance. As well, I talked to the finance director in the city of Oakley, who had contracted with Springstead, or are contracting currently with Springstead in a financial matter. They're working on some redevelopment there, and he was, at this point, they were pleased with what had happened. So far, they're just beginning on their project. They're happy. They also received a significant discount as a result of Springstead wanting to come to California to work on projects. They did mention a couple of coordination issues. Again, not huge red flags, but a few issues with coordination of information and meetings and such. But both reports were relatively positive. One a little Management Partner is perhaps a little more positive than Springstead, but both being positive.
Okay, and also, since the staff report went out on this, did Management Partners not reduce their price somewhat?
Thank you. We put new proposals in your boxes, and I believe the Management Partners number is down to $68,000, which is firm. And then, just as a reminder, the $38,000 from Springstead would be capped at an additional $7,000, so that would be $45,000 and some change for their additional expenses. So those are the final numbers.
Okay. All right. Now, Betty, comments?
I appreciated being able to talk to both companies one-on-one. That was a wise decision. I did get the better feel from them.
Well, Springstead had a very polished presentation. They had, you know, the slides on print and everything. And I felt good after the initial conversation with them. I hadn't seen Management Partners yet. And then we got a thank you email from them where they addressed us as commissioners. And it just sort of reinforced for me the feeling that, yeah, they want to break into California, but they don't really know anything about it yet. And as I say, there were two of them, and they were very polished, and it was quite a show. The gentleman from Management Partners was a roll-up sleeves, tie loosened. He'd changed the proposal in between two of the meetings so he could have something, you know, updated. He has worked in a lot of the cities where I worked, where I knew what the city governments were doing. He was the city manager in Ojai when I was working in that area and things, and he knows California. He knows how California government works. He knows how wacky the legislature is. And I think that I was much more impressed with Management Partners when I had stopped to analyze it. I mean, just by far and away, Management Partners was just more knowledgeable and more professional as far as what we need them to do, is the feeling I got.
Okay, Rick?
Well, it sounds like I'm in the minority, but that's okay. It's like having two really good-looking girls to take out, and you got to pick one of them. You know, one thing I liked about Springsteen, they were very positive in how we can enhance revenue rather than concentrating on just slashing. And they brought that up without prodding. When I interviewed Management Partners, we went through the whole thing, and there wasn't really any talk of that kind of thing. And I had to bring it up to them, you know, my concern about that, because it's my priority not to really cut services and slash staff, but to increase revenue. I like the fact that they are trying to break into the state and get a good reputation going. I like the fact that they're a lot cheaper. I also like the fact that they were going to sit down face-to-face with employees. Management Partners scaled back their proposal and even said, well, they're going to do an electronic survey with employees. It's not the same thing to me. This kind of thing deserves face-to-face contact. So I support Springsteen at this point.
Melanie? I support Management Partners. And I think I follow Councilmember Winholtz, and it's what's an intuitive, funny feeling I had. I liked Springstead the first day, but then I met with Management Partners later, and when I walked away, I just felt like I had interacted with professionals. As far as looking at revenue enhancements, I told Management Partners that we'd already done that, and that was okay with me. I am looking at streamlining the organization and making it really into a lean, clean machine, and they seem to be right on top of that. I also liked the web-based survey. We all did one for Management Partners before we went to that little meeting last week. I think this provides for our staff confidentiality and an ability to really answer a question that you don't get with focus groups. I was quite concerned that they were going to come in here and have focus groups and interview people, and I asked both of them, you know, what's this going to be like? Are people going to sit there and lie or something? And I just think Management Partners had the answers, and I was very appreciative of their professionalism even when they were lowering their rate for us, and that they got things done so quickly between two meetings. So I feel very assured that they will give us their money's worth within the first year.
Okay. Well, I have to agree with the majority. We interviewed Springstead first, and they were very enthusiastic, and I was very impressed with them. And I'm sure that they would do an excellent job because they want to get into this market, and I think that gives you a certain amount of impetus and enthusiasm for the job. However, I, too, just felt that Management Partners already knows it.
they already know how to do it, what to do, and what to do for us. And they did mention revenue when we spoke, so looking at other sources of revenue. So I think that, and I too was impressed because I was in the interview with Bill, and he just finished at the computer, re-safety. That's a major thing. But we got to be able to figure out where we are first before we can make the decisions on what we can provide. So that's my explanation for why we're spending this money, and I would now entertain a motion.
I'll try one. I move that we direct staff to enter into an agreement for our organizational analysis with management partners and at their reduced price of 68 and change.
Second.
Any more discussion?
Yes. Do we want to also approve a project contingency of 10% to 20%? I would recommend a 10% contingency.
Okay.
They ask us to do that.
Yeah, I was voluntary. Well, you know what? I'll include that in a motion if you want to include that with a second.
Okay. I don't want to, but I will.
Any further discussion?
To what?
$6,800.
$6,800. Which is, we will at the time be told that they want to spend it. It's not something they'll just go ahead and
right,
spend.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
But it's $6,800.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
One. Rick, opposed. Okay. And moving on to item D1, which is a proposal to authorize staff to negotiate an agreement with a web development company to update and provide a new website for the city. And this is Melody's report.
Yes, and I'm going to take it easy on you because I think you're all pretty much in agreement with this. I think that I'm going to take strong exception to one of the public comments about, ooh, this is a student report. I think these students should be thanked for doing what we would have had to have staff do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the group that attached their proposal to this by no means thought, oh, we're going to approve giving $5,000 to them. It was just an example. I said we had to have a ballpark idea. And that is the business that came in second in the Chamber's bidding war for a web developer, so that they couldn't find that they weren't doing business. They don't know how to look or something. Our website right now is it's just not accessible. It's not useful to citizens. It's not useful to us at times. I sometimes go there looking for information and can't find it. I go out to Google looking for information about, you know, plumbing in Morro Bay or something. So I would certainly urge council to direct staff to go out with an RFP and do it the proper way, I think is fine. I mean, this is our website. Oh, is this the PowerPoint show?
Yeah.
Oh, how silly. Well, you can. Well, I wouldn't want to flip all the way to the end because the students put a silly thing at the end. But you could flip through while we're just sort of looking, and then if the TV wants to go to that, and just keep on going through. That the student said that this is not aesthetically pleasing. Atascadero, they have a different kind of three-column thing. Much more information as you enter the site. The Chamber's new website is much more aesthetically pleasing. Consistency, and they brought up something I've argued about, that if we have a police department and another one, public services department, that look different from our home site, it doesn't look like we're all together. The content, they talk about the content and the chart was in the... real fun that we're the only city that has terrorists attacking water, that green arrow at the bottom, but all those red checks are the information that we don't have that other cities provide to residents. And I think residents in this town tend to use the web a lot to find things, and I think that's part of why we get so many questions, because they can't find it themselves. The number of links, Morro Bay's on the left with very few links to anything, and all the other cities have lots and lots of links, lots of information. So in redesigning the website, it's not just making it pretty, but it's also enhancing content. And then navigation. To navigate on our site, as we all know, you're going to hit one of those buttons on the left. It's going to take you somewhere. But if you went to another city website, like Atascadero, they have these drop-down menus
So you can tell when you click on public services or police, it'll drop down and it'll tell you where you're going to go. And when you click on one of those links, it'll do another subdirectory to the right there that will tell you how to go. The other thing they have, too, here is they have a search box on the website that will allow you to search a website. And most good websites also have a sitemap where you can click on a sitemap and just say, do they have it or not, you know, and not spend a whole lot of time. The city of Atascadero and Pismo, you might have noticed, paid different amounts, and the students told me that one of the main reasons you'll pay a lot of money, is to have a search within your site instead of having it go out to Google. So Atascadero paid less because when you do a search on Atascadero's website, Google handles the search for them, and you go to Google, and then you click on that. But if you go to the next one there, next slide, this is Pismo's result search. Now, that's a staff report, or anybody could upload, instead of always having to go to one IT guy all the time to have them do that. So they create a template, and we can do uploading. So I invite your questions or comments.
Okay. Betty?
I'm pretty lacking in knowledge in this area. I know it's really important. I know frustration trying to get around the website, and I really would like some consistency and better aesthetics. So I'm in favor of this. I'd like to see a cap on it. I'm not sure that I really care who does it because I think students are as knowledgeable as professionals these days.
Actually, but the report recommends that we not use students.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can have things good, fast, and cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know. I want this website designed to take place rather rapidly, and mm-hmm. I want it to be done excellently, and it doesn't cost that much. So students are recommending against using students.
Okay. But regardless, as long as we get a good company and we get it done, I think that's what's important.
Okay. Bill?
I think we ought to change it. I think we need to put a quick RFP out, see what comes in, and go from there.
Well, you know, we have our own IT guy here in the city, and I'd like to be able to, you know, get some maybe advice from him on how we should go about this. I spoke with Andrea about it, and she said, well, he really doesn't have time to dedicate to this. But with our new software system that we just paid, what, $275,000 for, his list of things to do, I would think should be shortened. It just seems to me if we have somebody on staff, why can't they contribute to this project?
Okay, I'll comment on that one, too. Big difference between a technology expert who can service your system and one who can design and create a website. It's a whole different thing. One is very artistic. It demands technical expertise, but it's a much more artistic and aesthetic thing, whereas the other one is a technician who knows how to fix it and make it run properly. So it really is a different thing. And I think I appreciate the student report, and I emailed Melody. I think it was great. I really think they did a good job. They didn't ask to do the job, to do the website design, and I thought that was very mature of them also to say, no, we can't do it. You can do it better if you hire an expert. And so I really appreciated it, and I agree with everything that they said. We really do need to upgrade our website. It is frustrating. I've tried to use it and can't do it successfully sometimes. And also, it will make things available. For instance, a citizen has asked about our weekly updates and could we share those. And this would be a way that we could do it if we can access it ourselves and not have to have someone who's expert do this for us. That's another important thing to develop that access. So I, too, would be in favor of the RFP.
And there would be a maintenance fee also, an ongoing every month maintenance fee with this.
I
think it's in the $75 to $100 a month, but it's every month, you know.
We actually don't know what there will be until
I think it said 70.
We're not saying this company. We're saying we go out for an RFP. We're not approving this company. They just use that as an example. What we're saying is go out for an RFP so it's available.
Well, I understand that. What I'm saying is there will be a maintenance fee monthly, ongoing, every month. So
I don't know that there necessarily has to be.
I don't think so.
For example, the Neighborhood Watch website, I think basically the actual host is like $50 a year, and essentially now that it's set up, it was set up by volunteers, it's just going to be handled in-house. There's no maintenance company or anything like that. It's $50 a year. I think it was 52 or something like that, frankly. I mean, we could hire a company to do it and to maintain it for us. There would be a fee, but if it gets simple enough that we can upload this stuff with using city staff from their position because it's their document, then, you know, maybe twice a year or three or four times a year, you might want to have somebody go out there and make some changes. But as long as you're not doing major mechanical changes, I don't think that there's going to be that kind of a maintenance fee. I could be really wrong. The RFP will tell us that.
I have one technical question because I don't understand too much, but if we want more documents on there or we need different kinds of programming, will the RFP say, you know, we could, like we did for management partners, we can do this much for this much money, or you can do this much more for this much money? How does that work?
I think if I could jump in here, and I would say that one of the uses of the contract that was put on here is to write the RFP. True? So, I mean, if you look at this, this is what we want. Send us and tell us what you would provide. And if you look at this, too, by the way, they don't charge us.
And you're all right. You're all correct on your ideas. Just went through it in San Simeon. We spent under $5,000 to do that website completely on the outside. They were in charge of how many drop-down menus there would be, how many sub-parts of it were all part of the process. They came and gave a couple presentations till they were happy with the final product.
Mm-hmm.
Since we don't have any IT person or anything, you know, we kind of have to, instead of downloading it, and there's no staff, they have no staff at all, they have a higher monthly rate because we email them the staff reports or the agenda, and then they download them on, because we didn't even want to do that, so they have a higher monthly rate. So it is depending on how much you need them for that maintenance is what the cost is. So that all can come out during the RFP and when you sign the contract to do it.
Ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Thank you. I would move that the City Council authorize staff to send out an RFP to web development companies and... in order to provide a new website for the city.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Oh,
aye.
Rob?
Aye.
I see the process somewhat just like we went through with the management. We'll bring back mm-hmm. four or five, you know, and let you choose as to which
sure.
one to go with.
Sounds good. Okay. Future agenda items. Betty?
I have one. Mr. Heath mentioned tonight about our letter for single-payer health insurance that we kind of led the way on a year ago, and I'd like to see us re-sign on to that, and I'd be glad to find the old resolution and update it and bring it back so there's no staff time involved, and would like to see it done, I guess, no later than February.
Okay. Do I have agreement on that? I'm for it. Okay. And that'll be Betty. We'll do the staff report and research on it. Okay, that's the only one, Betty?
Mm-hmm.
Bill?
No.
Rick? Melody?
Yeah, I have a few of them, actually. I think we were supposed to get a different vice mayor, and I just love being vice mayor, but I think by our city code we were supposed to do that tonight, so I would like to do that in January. Excellent. And then I just passed down some information about plastic bottles. I'd like to have a discussion here about our policy on purchasing plastic bottles for the city.
Okay. Good with me.
Okay.
Anybody else?
That's fine.
Okay. Now, will you do the staff report? We don't have to have staff time on that, do we?
No.
Okay.
I think
do you
so.
Want to include styrofoam with that?
I don't know that we purchase any styrofoam. But I'd like to just do plastic bottles now. This is about what the city purchases.
Okay.
I also have already available a staff report with, of course, my cover sheet on the use of GEM cars, those little electric vehicles that we've all gotten postcards several times from the GEM company. Students have finished the report. It got an A. I'd like to put a cover on it and bring it in sometime.
Okay. That, again, is you.
We don't need any.
Okay.
And then, let me see. I would like to agendize a discussion of this idea that the Lynx likes Morro Bay as a home port. I think that should come up to council level, and we should talk, get a little bit more information and talk about it.
Okay, you know the Golden Hind thing is happening too, right? So,
is it? Yeah, I got the email that Rick had sent back to you. But if somebody wants to be a home port here, I would like to have information about the cost of the city and the benefit to the city and a discussion of it here.
Because Hall Thomas brought the Golden Hind idea to us. Remember when we did give approval to go ahead and pursue a foundation for that?
The Golden Hind was here.
No, it's a new project.
No, I mean at council.
Yeah, didn't it come before us?
No,
I thought it did.
Business meeting.
Oh, was that even the Golden Hind?
I don't remember having
okay.
any of
that. All right. Let's do that then. If you're going to have the links, let's have the Golden Hind too. Let's
That's
have both
fine.
Of them. Make a presentation.
What does it take to host a big ship here?
And that's simply a matter of asking them to come and make their presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we decide whether we want to agendize anything. Okay. Okay.
And I went to a meeting last night on water, and it left me with 1,000 ideas, but I think we have enough to do already. And I'll bring those back in January.
Okay. All right, I want to add two. One, and I think maybe this has already been discussed, Rob, in what you were saying about the marijuana ordinance, that you are going to include massage parlors in that. Okay, so that one doesn't have to be separate. The other thing I'd like to bring back for discussion, and I'm trying to think, I don't think it even needs a staff report. OHI recently said the Anum. All right. I've got the quote closing tonight. Oh, and a reminder, we will not be here again until January. So Happy New Year, everybody. The thought for today is from Margaret Lee Runbeck, an American author. Happiness is not a station you arrive at, but a manner of traveling. So I hope you all have very happy travels over the holiday season. Thank you. Good night. We're adjourned.